It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Richard is in transit, so he'll miss today's show, but we have lots of stuff Paul loves to talk about. Things like AI, Xbox. We heard a lot about Xbox's plans for the future. Some hot new games coming out on Game Pass. Of course, Windows 11. And Microsoft's finally announced the dates for Paul's very favorite trade show. All that and more coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 869. Recorded Wednesday, February 21st, 2024. Pretty bueno. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Miro. Miro is one incredible visual place that brings all of your innovative work together, no matter where you're located. We're talking six whole capability bundles, from product development workflows to content visualization and more. And it's powered by Miro AI, which means you're constantly generating new ideas or summarizing complex information. Miro connects seamlessly to the platforms you're already using, like Jira, Confluence, Google, Asana. So you centralize work in a way that makes sense for your team. They don't need to leave Miro to update projects or statuses in any of those tools. You could do it all through Miro. Miro users report saving up to 80 hours per year because they streamline conversations, cut down on meetings, and see all the most up-to-date information in one place. Miro has a board video recording feature now called Talk Track, where you can record your thoughts and leave them on the board instead of scheduling yet another meeting. Go on, try it for yourself. Get your first three boards for free to start working better at Miro.com/podcast. That's Miro.com/podcast. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Paul Thurrott is here, Thurrott.com, leanpub.com for his books, visiting us from beautiful Mexico City, where he makes his home. I like that. I like saying that. Where he makes his home. He's survived by his wife and two children.
Yes. We did have an earthquake scare the other day.
Did you? Yeah. Mexico City's famous for bad earthquakes. Yeah.
Yep.
That's all right. You'll be fine.
I guess so. I know the building already sways when trucks drive by, so I can only imagine.
That's a good thing. You don't want it to be rigid. You want it to rock.
I know, but it's, you know, it's like when we were on the cruise, like you're laying in the bed and it kind of.
Oh, that's a weird feeling. I know.
It goes back and forth. And you're like, is that a truck?
Are we going to roll over? That's what I always think. Are we going to actually roll over and it'll be like the Poseidon Adventure.
A perfect storm or something. And yeah, Richard, exactly.
And Ernest Borgnine's going to run in my room and say, Shelley Winters wants you in the kitchen. That sounds like a bad dream. Might have had
that. Yep.
Anyway, you might have noticed Richard's not here. He is, we don't know what happened to him. I think he got on an upside down boat. I don't know. Isn't he supposed to be in Puerto Vallarta today? I can't remember.
I wouldn't have remembered that until you said it, but. I can't keep track of this guy. He's like, where in the world is Richard Campbell?
He was in Sydney before that. Tauranga, New Zealand. I think PV. Anyway, flight delayed. He's driving as fast as he can down the fine, high-quality Mexican highways.
Why, we'll never know. But here he comes. We'll see.
So he'll show up. Maybe, maybe not. Doesn't matter because I got you, babe. And I am ready to do a show. And as it turns out, this is right up your alley because you may remember we talked about last week, Phil Spencer felt compelled to explain what's going on with Xbox.
My favorite part about this event, which was last Thursday, was that he literally started by saying when we were planning this back in December, all we were going to talk about was what we were doing with Activision Blizzard. And I could feel the little bell go off, you know, ding, 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 you won there, you know. And that was my kind of expectation. But because of all the rumors about, you know, cross-platform and everything, they felt compelled to talk about that stuff first. But when I looked at this, I don't think that was all that important, frankly. We'll get to it, but A lot of it was just a reiteration of strategy that has been in place for a long time. I know there was a lot of angst and kind of hand-wring, you know, the past week or two. I hope everyone feels better, right? Because I think this went great and I think they're doing the right thing. Unfortunately, they are being vague on the specifics of Activision Blizzard because we know now that the first of those games will appear on Game Pass on March 24th, which is seriously March 24th? Come on. And then we don't know anything beyond that. So does that mean we get like one game a week or, you know, who knows? I suppose it's understandable they want to milk this, spend the rest of the year. Oh, here's a new one, you know, so we'll probably have a lot of that. But they reiterated some things and kind of confirmed that they apply to Activision Blizzard, which I think is important. So, for example, all first-party Xbox games will appear on Game Pass on day one. And that does include Activision Blizzard and ZeniMax and everything else they own, right? So to me, that's important. I would have understood if that wasn't the case. I think they might have complicated matters. Otherwise, you know, imagine a situation where, say, the next Call of Duty was purchase only for the first month or two. I mean, I think a lot of Game Pass fans might have revolted over that kind of a thing. Because of the cross-platform rumors and also some of the realities there, they dropped this kind of a bomb, I'll call it. Game Pass will only be available on Xbox, right? Now, we got to be careful about what that means, because what is Xbox? I mean, what is Xbox, right? I think for a lot of people, Xbox is the console, but that's not what Xbox is, right? Xbox is this platform, this ecosystem. So we have Game Pass on the PC, but that's considered Xbox, right? So I think that this is a moving target. And I think that this might evolve to include other platforms in the form of such things as a Game Pass mobile that may appear on iOS if they can ever get their act together there. It's maybe Europe only. We'll see how those things evolve. And I don't think it precludes Game Pass coming to other consoles, frankly, because, you know, this is the whole mantra, like we're going to meet gamers where they are. So we'll see, but that's kind of where that's at. Exclusivity, it's been a long thing. I mean, ever since there's been a PC play in the most recent era, we've been concerned about what it means to be exclusive. Sony obviously has exclusives. They're doing a great job compared to Xbox. We have Xbox exclusives in the Microsoft space, but it's Xbox ecosystem. He explained a lot of things I wish didn't need explaining. I had written about this myself when I saw all of the angst and everything about people benefiting no matter what platform they play on when games are in more places, right? You have people to play with, people to play against, bigger audience, et cetera. It's better for creators, the people that make the games, more players, et cetera, right? So, I mean, it's not really new, but it's, you know, I feel like people need to have it kind of drilled into their head a little bit. Fans of Windows will appreciate this kind of variation on the Windows only, Windows first, Windows best strategies of the past. They tried to push this notion that A, they're not getting out of hardware, B, that Xbox will always offer the best experience on Xbox hardware. And they actually talked a little bit about next gen hardware. Now, we know there are refreshes coming, right, to the current consoles, but what they're talking about here is the next gen, the thing that comes later. And they referred to this as the largest technical leap you have ever seen in a hardware generation.
Oh, come
so,
on.
I know. That was a little hard to accept. I feel like we're running out of superlatives
in a case like that. It's like, okay, just say it's a big jump or something.
Right. So here, look, the nice thing about that statement is it could mean anything, right? So for example, if Microsoft moves to ARM, right, which is one of the rumors, not a rumor, that was one of the leaks, as a possibility. If Microsoft moves to ARM and or NPU hardware in this thing, I mean, you could argue that this meets that definition. I mean, I think, you know, in games, we have very standard concerns, which we've had for a long, long time. And it always kind of boils down to resolution and frame rate, frankly. And then, of course, latency if you're playing online and things like ray tracing. I guess we'll just call it quality, like quality of graphics. I think we hit a wall, not just in Xbox, but just in gaming with hyper-realistic graphics and the need to have a Hollywood style movie production budget to make these games. And that maybe Nintendo, if they could teach us anything as an industry, is that, you know, the game matters a lot. Maybe focus on that first, and that we kind of navel gaze over these little spec things. But it's not like we're going to 8K 60 for the next gen, right? That would be a huge technical leap, but I don't think we need it. And I don't think it's going to happen either. So it's hard to say what they meant by that, because that sentence I read was the whole thing they said about it. So there's not a lot of details. I do like they talked a lot about what they call game library preservation. This is the Xbox backward compatibility stuff. This notion that if you buy a game digitally, especially, they tried to figure out physical, weren't able to do that, but you buy a game digitally and it comes forward with you, right? And one of the things that came out after this show was this notion that this stuff is all going to probably end up on game streaming, cloud streaming, meaning that if you have this library of games that goes back, you know, possibly the OG Xbox, you'll be able to play these things in the future. So there's some way forward for you as an Xbox fan. I think that's hugely important. Obviously, they didn't get into specifics about the next gen. There are issues with compatibility when you switch chipsets, right? We went from an Intel Celeron in the first gen to PowerPC back to an AMD x86 type chip in the two most recent generations. It's almost certainly going to change again. And there are challenges there, obviously. But, you know, they're big on cross-play, cross-save, cross-progression, backward compatibility. This whole kind of notion of what makes Xbox unique and special, I think, is awesome. So then they, not then, actually, now I will. They actually put this up front because of all the speculation. And I didn't like the way they did this. They were forced to, right? They weren't ready to say this. But basically what they admitted at the time, right up front in the show, was that they are going to bring four games to other consoles, was how they described it. Not a big change in their strategy, not a anything about whatever. It just, you know, but they didn't say what those games were. And the idea was that the studios in charge of them were getting ready to make their own announcements. He did say, Phil Spencer did say, neither of those was Starfield or Indiana Jones, right? But he also gave these kind of interesting hints about the types of games, right? These aren't the big franchise games. Like, I would have guessed if you had said, I'm going to bring four games from the Xbox stable cross-platform that are not today cross-platform, I would have said Halo, Gears of War, Flight Sim, maybe a Forza game, that kind of thing. No, these are smaller games. These are games that they looked at and said, you know, there's a service-based component to this. There are communities that love these games. They're smaller typically. They were never really meant to be platform exclusives, you know? And their games, Xbox felt, deserved more of a chance to kind of get out in the world. Now, today, just before the show started, they just announced what those games were. So I don't know, I guess 6 days was enough. And those games are Sea of Thieves, right? Which was one of the ones I had guessed after that fact. Hi-Fi Rush, which I've never really even heard of. Grounded and Pentiment. And Pentiment is a game I'm actually pretty familiar with. So I had, what did I guess? I had guessed, let me see if I can find this. I guess knowing that it wasn't Forza, Halo, et cetera, I'd guess Sea of Thieves and maybe As Dusk Falls, but those are the four games. So they came out today and said that that's what's happening, and they're coming to Sony and Nintendo, right? Although not all of them on each, and obviously we have to have a confusing matrix of availability because that's what we do. Anywho, I hope that, other than kind of some of the vague stuff, right? You know, the biggest technical leak we're ever seen in a hardware generation, right? Hilarious. And I don't know, you know, we don't know when Activision Blizzard, I'm still, it's like they've been talking about this internally since December. And the only thing they were able to announce 3 months later was Diablo 4 on March 24th. Like, guys, come on. Like, I'm not saying you have to lay out the schedule, but there must be an idea of how this stuff is going to come up. So we just don't know what that is. Anyway, we'll have more Xbox news at the, as we always do, but I wanted to throw this one up front because this was kind of the day of destiny for Xbox fans anyway. And as they reiterated a bunch of times, I don't see much has changed from a strategy perspective. It's just that now they have an incredible stable of first party games. And so they were at least able to verify that all the first party stuff would continue to be available in Game Pass on day one, which is neat. So whenever the next Call of Duty comes out, I guess we'll get that on Game Pass. We'll see what the sales look like. They're probably like, I'm guessing Game Pass sales are going to go up and Call of Duty sales are going to go down, but we'll see.
Do you think Microsoft's given up on trying to beat PS5 with Xbox? Yeah. They know they're just, PS5 is just going to win. And so might as well put their stuff on PS5.
I was surprised how emphatic they were that Xbox doesn't exist without the console.
That's an interesting point. You're right.
I think it's one of those marketing things, right? You can't Osborne the platform, right?
Right.
There's no way that the long-term strategy is less and less reliance on the console. The one argument I could make to keeping this stuff afloat, although it's super expensive to do the R&D and everything, is that now that they have all these Activision Blizzard games, they have something that can subsidize it essentially, right? I mean,
right.
This is the thing they didn't have before. And Microsoft, you know, it's hard to line these things up, but they've launched new consoles without a new Halo title at day one. Like that, to me, those things should always be aligned. And because they only have a handful of
exclusives.
Super popular first party games, right? Yeah. Now they have more, a lot more. And maybe it doesn't matter. Yeah.
So, I mean, but they did say we're going to make another console. We're going to make another one. It's going to be the best one ever.
Of course it is.
They're still involved in the hardware, even though it's a money loser for them, right? The games aren't. Software's not. Or is it?
So, I've been reading Steven Sanofsky's book. And there's no jokes to be made here that are in any way polite. So I'll just say, I'm trying to think, how do I say this?
Oh, don't be polite. Why bother?
I'm thinking more. I mean, even more from a sort of a personal perspective, I there's no doubt that I experienced some form of PTSD from this guy and the shabby way he treated people like Mary Jo and I. I studiously avoided this book for a variety of reasons, because I didn't want to relive it again, you know, but then, you know, I think maybe I talked about this last week. I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but look, if you care about Windows as much as I do, I mean, you have to. So I read it and I've got Tourette's over there. I'm screaming at nobody. And, you know, as I'm reading it and all the mistruths and the bizarre interpretations of events, but he was inside Microsoft. Anyway, one of the things, and there are these little facts that kind of come out. He talks about, you know, he's verified a lot of the stuff I've said about Microsoft continually fighting the web as a platform and losing. And they knew that so long ago, and they just kept going. And it, he saw that as a huge mistake. So I certainly agree with him on some things. Anyway, one of the little tidbits that he came out with was that Xbox has never made money, and if it wasn't for the console, it's sort of a break-even business, is the way he described it. So, you know, if it was just software, it would probably be doing pretty well. And obviously these days with just software, with Activision, Blizzard, ZeniMax, et cetera, that's a pretty solid business right there, you know?
So how important is it they make their own hardware at all? I mean, is it just
I pride? Believe that, yeah. No, I think it honestly has to do more with fans. And I just based on my own interaction with people who just, there are certain kind of religious topics in our industry.
Yeah.
The Chromium web render is one where people just, I mean, they line up and they just la 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 la. They don't listen. They don't, no one's seeing both sides of it. Arguably the certification stuff. I think most people kind of agree with that, but there are these things where people just kind of, you know, walled garden ecosystems versus open ecosystems. And people feel very strongly about one side or the other, and they have a hard time seeing the other side of it. And I think in the Xbox world, gamers, console players, Xbox is not a thing unless there's a console, you know, and whether Microsoft internally believes that to be true or not, I don't think they do. I do think they believe that enough people would leave if they announced today, we're not doing any more consoles. I think the business might start to tank just because so many people would walk away.
Yeah.
So I think they need time to show people how, you know, there'll become a day someday where you'll be able to stream your entire Xbox library of games from the past onto a PlayStation, probably, you know, and it will be an eye-opening moment for people where they realize that the platform that they thought was a piece of hardware, which they very explicit was not, is not. It's this other thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's
weird for me when you say Xbox and I'm including the hardware in this, like there's something, but there is, and that's, I think it's an important context. Phil Spencer is quoted in the Financial Times this morning complaining about Apple.
We're going to get to this.
I'm just wondering, Sony charges Microsoft 30%, right? When you buy a game on PS5.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, and vice versa. But that's pretty much, the flow is mostly towards Sony on that.
The argument there, of course, is, you know, what kind of a hypocrite do you have to be to complain to the European regulators that some platform is charging you 30% when that's what you charge? And the reason that's not hypocritical is that antitrust requires scale. And there are 20 to 50 million Xbox consoles in active use. There are 60 to 100 million PlayStation consoles in active use. There are 2 billion iPhones in active use. So, or whatever the number is, it's billions. It's an order of magnitude bigger. And that's when antitrust kicks in. The other thing is that the business model for the iPhone is not contingent on we sell this hardware at a loss and then we make it up to you with the razor blades. That's how the console market, which is a much smaller market, works. Right. It's kind of an implicit contract. I mean, this is, if we sold this thing for what it costs, no one would buy it.
But sounds like Microsoft's content, at least in the game sphere, to give Sony 30% more and more. I mean, if they didn't have any hardware, that would be all one way.
Well, right. So think about the different kind of parts of that puzzle, right? So you're Microsoft, you're Xbox, which, you know, again, a lot of people see as a console that's competing with the Sony console. But Xbox is a much bigger thing than that. And the console not only is in many ways the smallest piece of that puzzle, it's the part that loses money. It's the part that drags on everything else. If it wasn't for that, this business would be incredibly profitable, right? So their deal is like, look, this will benefit our console gamers because now they'll have these people they can play with a much wider audience because they'll be cross-platform, the games. We as a publisher can spread this game further. And even though we are taking a 30% hit on Sony or Nintendo, whatever those fees are, it's still more profitable than the console. I mean, it sells at such volume compared to the consoles and potentially, and it's so much less expensive to make. The whole cost structure of this is just a completely different thing. So yeah, they've done some gymnastics here to understand what they're going to bring where and what. And look, there's a lot of things you can't come out and say too early in a cycle and ruin the sales of the thing you're already making, right? So I don't think anyone should doubt that they would like to get rid of the hardware long-term but realize they can't. I don't think anyone should doubt the fact that this is an experiment that if it goes well, we're going to see more games, right? I mean, of course. And I think they want to focus more on the high volume, lower margin products and services in Xbox than the low margin money losing hardware, which is, you know, something we see elsewhere at Microsoft too, right? With Surface and Windows and so forth. So it's, you can't just say we're done with, you know, with hardware. You can't just say we're done with only putting games on our console. But you know, you make little inroads and we'll see what happens.
Well, they're obviously investing. I mean, it must cost billions to do the R&D to develop the next billions generation.
I know.
I
know.
Right?
Well, especially if it's going to be a
leap you've ever seen.
A technical leap of this kind.
Do you think they might be looking at Vision Pro and saying, hey, what if we did it as a VR thing?
No, I don't.
Been
actually.
Been there, done that?
Well, yeah. I mean, mixed reality failed for Microsoft. HoloLens has failed other than as a very vertical device. Apparently, it's part of the military industrial complex now. In fact, Windows Mixed Reality is coming out of Windows in 24H2, so it's not even going to be there anymore.
Wow, that's amazing.
Microsoft does support Vision Pro and MetaQuest with its productivity stuff.
Right.
You know, Microsoft 365 and so forth. But it's weird. When PlayStation did a pretty good job over two generations with VR hardware, I think the most recent gen got hurt by cost. You know, it was expensive, but Microsoft never bothered. Hardware margins, we've always lost money on hardware.
Right.
The relative volume of these things is low. They had their big splash with Kinect, which for 10 seconds was awesome. and then became a nightmare.
Still,
and then they made that mistake of bundling it. You know,
yeah.
I think that kind of thing is.
They got a sour taste from it.
Yeah, and by the way, for whatever it's worth, I mean, the Kinect and the little me people that we had for a little while as our avatars in Xbox space was obviously based on the Nintendo Wii at the time, and they had those little weird controllers, the nunchucks and things you could, people were throwing at their screens by mistake. You know, they tried to emulate that. It's worth pointing out, Nintendo walked away from that too, by the way, right? The Switch doesn't have anything like that.
No.
So
they didn't make another Wii U. You're right, yeah.
I'm not trying to be a jerk to gamers like myself, but we're not exactly active people.
It's a weird.
I mean, you know,
you don't want to get up. It's a weird. I have to say, it's a weird category. It's such a niche, really. And in a way, Microsoft cannibalizes their own PC market by being a good gaming machine. I mean, maybe they feel like, well, there's people who aren't going to do PC gaming, and we want to capture them. But really, the people who don't do PC gaming probably don't do console gaming either. They probably do casual gaming, and Microsoft has no position there. Well, I guess they do now that they own King, but
But there's no Microsoft Play anymore. There was a brief one with Windows Mixed Reality, although I couldn't point to a single first party game that supported that. Right, that was a good example of them throwing something out in the world and seeing what happened, and what happened was nothing. So you know they weren't behind it 100% because there weren't any Microsoft apps of anything other than the basics. Like, look, you can look at a web browser and a 2D, you know, panel on the wall.
How cool.
That kind of stuff. Or here's your Zune or whatever we had at the time, music collection. Like, neat, you know. I don't know what to say. I don't know. I just don't see it being a thing for them.
So interesting.
Yeah.
It's weird that they would come out and say the largest technical leap you've ever seen. And
how is that?
Like, what is...
I like companies to be bold, you know, but then they fall into caricature, like the courage statement that Apple made.
Yeah, about
the
that Mac, was bad.
Mac Pro, that was just dumb miscalculation.
In hindsight, that was dumb. Yeah.
Yeah. In the Windows space, we had Terry Morrison claiming they were going to hit a billion Windows 10 users within, I think they said 2 to 3 years. And then within 10 seconds, they realized, oh, crap, we got to scale this back. That's not going to happen. Like, you know, it's... And then you get into a situation where they kind of cook the books for several months to try to make it work, you know? So we'll see what that means.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. It's delightfully vague. So I don't know.
That could be the show title. Delightfully vague.
Delightfully vague.
Except I think we might've used it. I don't know.
Probably.
We still have much more to talk about, including Windows 11, but let's take a little break here. I'm stalling as Richard Campbell drives up Highway 200 on his way.
Oof, I feel weird betting on that. I don't know.
Don't speed, Richard. Don't speed. If you're listening to us on the radio, it's okay. It's okay. We can do the show without you. We really can. Maybe that's what he's afraid of.
I know. He shouldn't be afraid. I love him.
Fear not. Fear not, Richard. Your seat is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Our show this week brought to you by Melissa, the data quality experts. Melissa has helped over 10,000 businesses worldwide harness accurate data with their industry-leading solutions. They process, this kind of blows me away, over 1 trillion address, email, name, and phone records. Ask G2, and they'll tell you in the 2024 grid report that Melissa are the leaders in data quality and address verification. They got that prestigious leader title. Melissa offers everything you might want as a user. Free trials, sample codes, flexible pricing with an ROI guarantee. They have unlimited tech support to customers. And by the way, it is international all over the world, all over the world. And if you are in government, you'll be glad to know they're FedRAMP authorized. Actually, that's everybody benefits from that higher security level. They are a FedRAMP authorized data resource, means you get the highest level of security for your customer data. It's also GDPR and CCPA, the California Privacy Act, compliant. They meet SOC 2 and HIPAA high trust standards for information security management. So you never have to worry about giving your data to Melissa. But you do have to worry that your data is going bad even as we speak, which is why you need Melissa.
You can also improve your e-commerce operations with Melissa. Now, as an ESRI partner, Melissa's cloud-based tools standardize, validate, verify, and enhance data. All that data on which top business operations rely, ensuring address data is seamlessly location optimized. And remember to download the free Melissa Lookups app. You can get it on iOS and Android. Absolutely free. You don't even have to sign up, and you can use it to look up addresses, IP addresses, phone numbers. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned free at melissa.com/twit. M-E-L-I-S-S-A, melissa.com/twit. We thank them so much for supporting Windows Weekly. It's kind of like the good old days. Me and Paul waiting for Richard to come home, up all night, tapping our wristwatches. Windows 11 news.
Yes. So Microsoft's new thing is to always release insider builds right after we do Windows Weekly, which I find to be hilarious. Excuse me.
I try not to take it personally.
it's kind of hard sometimes. But, you know, I try. Yeah. People who've been watching the show for a while or reading the site will remember that there used to be this event that would occur right before every new version of Windows was released that I referred to as the magic window. It was that time when you could switch out of the insider program and go back to stable. Because back in the day, each channel or ring, as we used to call them a long time ago, corresponded to some version of Windows. Now it's this, you know, mess of who knows what's what. But the weird thing about that to me is that there's UI in Windows. If you go into the Windows Update Settings, Advanced, I think, or whatever it is down there, this is the Windows Insider bit. The UI is still in Windows. It says, you know, click here and you'll get out when this version of Windows is released. The problem is that version of Windows is not a version of Windows. It never gets released. And so people sign up and roll into the Insider program and then they can't get out. Back in, I think it was January, there was a beta channel build where Microsoft said, you know, we're going to let you guys get out. We're going to give you they didn't call it this, but I think of it as an off-ramp. Well, maybe they did call it this. It's an off-ramp, right? In other words, they've started to bring some mobility back to the Insider program. They also aligned, remember, the dev and beta channels. The Canarian dev channels, right, which are now heading toward 24H2, right? And so there's a little bit of mobility there. They've never announced this, but I've heard now from three different people in the release preview program who were able to get out of release preview by turning off that switch that says always get the quickest, you know, the builds quick as possible, looking for updates, and then they get offered the stable version of Windows 11. So I think it took them 3-4 years or something, but I think they're finally starting to move into this type of system. Again, not that there'll be a magic window necessarily, although they've been so obvious about 24H2 so far in advance, which they've not done in 3, 4, 5 years, I don't know, long time, maybe never ever with Windows 11, that maybe they're, you know, they understand the problem here and they're actually trying to fix it. I will say, if you're in the Insider program, you need to be technical enough to know how to, you know, reset the computer back to stable, right? That you should be able to download an ISO, put it on a USB key, clean install. I feel like that should be, you should be able to prove you have to do that before they let you enroll a computer Insider. But since they don't do that, at least they're giving people a way out. So that's neat. That wasn't really I wrote about this and I'm talking about it now because I've heard from people who have experienced it. I look back because I had a vague memory that they were doing this with at least one channel, and I think it is the beta channel. I wouldn't be surprised to discover they just do this everywhere. And if you think about how an operating system, the applications you run and the data you own are all kind of segmented, or not kind of, literally are segmented. This type of thing honestly shouldn't be a technical challenge for Microsoft. So I'm glad to see him doing it. It's kind of a nice thing. I could test Windows 11, whatever channel for, you know, 2 months and say, you know what, this isn't for me. I'm going back to stable and flip a switch, install the build and just go.
I do think that all the time. I think that's, yeah, I miss that.
Yeah. This is the way Android works. I think it's the way iOS works. You know, if you're on a beta, you can say, hey, I want to get out of this.
Yeah. What is it on iOS? You delete the beta
profile.
I think the enrollment certificate is rebooting to kind of, I think, right? Because these things are all segmented.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're worried that people are unsophisticated enough that they might not know that when you go back to stable, you might lose some features because you're testing features that are for a version that doesn't exist yet. Yeah, but to me, that's just obvious.
You shouldn't be in the insider program.
I think the same thing. So, but who knows? I guess they've made it too easy maybe to enroll. So lots of mainstream users in there.
Yeah, I guess.
And then, so since last week, every channel has gotten new builds, right? And so Canary and Dev, like I said, are on the same builds for now. They're explicitly testing 24H2. I do like that transparency. There's an interesting feature. Let me see if I have it on this computer, actually. So if you, this looks completely different. Why does this look different on every computer? Yeah. So if you're in stable, like I am, you think I'd be getting used to this. So if you're in stable now, you can go and look at the widgets board. And if the UI looks a little different at the top, they used to have a little picture view up there, but you see a little gear icon instead. You have the option to, let me see what the name of it is to, there's an option there called show or hide feeds. You can turn off that crappy news junk that's in there.
Oh, hallelujah.
Just turn off Microsoft Start. Yeah, you can turn it off. In the future, I suspect we're going to see some third-party feeds show up. So you could add, not that Google would do this, but like a Google News feed or maybe an RSS reader will make a feed or something. But for now, you can just toggle Microsoft Start on or off, and you should turn it off. It's junk. And when you do that, the widgets board become, the widgets interface becomes just widgets, like as the name suggests. So in my case, I see weather and traffic in this area, which is apparently horrific. Some stock.
Now we know why Richard's not here. Yeah. So, okay. So that's it. So tell me how to do that again.
Yeah. So if you open widgets, it depends on what you see there, right? So it's not clear how you get this update per se. I think it was part of a KB that went out recently, but if you open that interface and you see a little picture there in the corner, you don't have this yet.
It's like a person with a talk.
Yeah. But if you see a gear in the top right.
I see the gear. Widgets. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then you'll have a new menu, a new settings menu.
Yeah.
Which discover new widgets, personalize, et cetera.
Yeah.
Down four or five items is something called show or hide feeds.
Uh-huh.
Click that and you'll see an option to disable Microsoft Start.
Off.
There you go.
Yep. Widgets board needs to close. Good. That's fine. I don't mind.
Okay. Yeah. So they tested that feature for, 10 or 12 seconds in Insider. So we have that now. That's good.
Oh, I really like this. That's so
this
much
is what
better.
Everyone wanted. Yep.
Yeah.
But they're continuing to test changes to widgets and in the, I think it's Canary. Well, Canary and Dev are the same. So in Canary and Dev, there's actually new navigation. There's a new navigation pane on the left of the widgets board, for lack of a better term. And if I understand the image I'm looking at correctly, you could probably switch between different views where you just have widgets, you just have Microsoft Start. You might just have a third party thing in the future if they could ever get anyone to extend it. So they continue to kind of work on this user interface. So here we are, 3 years in plus, and they finally are fixing the biggest, not the biggest, but one of the biggest complaints, certainly, that people have had with Windows 11 and this terrible interface, which should be useful, but is just terrible. So that's good. There's a new accessibility setting for low vision users. They're testing the weathered experience on the lock screen that's been unstable since late last year. They're still testing that in Canary and Dev for some reason, and I have no idea what's going on there. And if you do want to do a clean install of this latest build, you can do so. There are downloadable ISOs, which they only do every couple of months. They don't do it for every build. Beta channel, nothing major there. They brought some of the updates to the snipping tool and Notepad app, which includes, by the way, that AI Copilot, help me write thing to beta. That's okay. There's that new manage mobile devices interface where you take a picture on your phone and if you want it, you can get a notification right there in your PC and download it immediately. I guess I don't know why people need it that immediately, but whatever. I mean, I go between my phone and my computer all the time. I don't think I've ever once wanted to do that exactly, but they're doing that. That's okay. Where Microsoft is being very explicit about 24H2, they're not being explicit about Moment 5 because, of course, they never publicly said that term. So the release preview got a humongous update last week. And it's one of those configuration change updates where it flips a bunch of features on that were silently installed on your computer when you weren't paying attention. And this is very clearly moment five, right? And so if Microsoft follows the schedule, I want to be clear, they don't have to and don't. Next Tuesday, the 27th, is week D. That would be the week. And if week D comes, we talk next week. We'll see if they do this, but that should be the day that moment five, which won't be called that, right? It will be KB something, 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 will be a preview update, optional install. And then 2 weeks after that, probably, but again, these things change, who knows, it will go to stable. So release preview has it now. Those people who want to install in stable, the preview update will have it next Tuesday, probably again. And then potentially 2 weeks from then, it would go out stable to everybody or at least start rolling out. So, I don't know that anything in here sticks out, honestly. One of the alleged features is that Copilot in the taskbar is moving over to the right side of the taskbar, except on every one of my computers now, it's already there. So I don't know. I mean, this is one of those, like, they always do this. You know, this is like a feature of it, but it's out, it's still unstable. They just kind of burp things out now. Some improvements to Windows Share, which I think a lot of people don't use. I think the one improvement it could use is a consistent interface that works everywhere, including in OneDrive folders, but that's not how that works. Nearby Share is being fixed as well. Transfer speed improvements. I've already seen this feature, so I don't know what's going on there. New snap layout suggestions, where if you snap a window or app into a particular area, it will look at what else is running and use AI, because that's what everything is now, to suggest maybe this is the layout you want. I feel like when people do snap, they know what they want.
How well does that work? I mean, yeah. Have you tried it?
No, I've not tried it. Yeah. I just don't. I honestly
I don't need help with that, really, right?
Well, yeah. I don't mean to be condescending, but I am. No, it's a weird fact that I probably use Snap with one window only more than I use it to snap actual windows. Like, I often want
a
window
full
to snap.
Screen, you mean?
No, I just like there are certain apps that I just use almost full screen, right? So on this monitor I'm looking at, the way I positioned Photoshop was I snapped it to the right half of the screen, and then I pull out the side of it so that it fills most of the screen, but I still see some of the desktop. And the reason that I do that is because I use the desktop as a scratch space. So I like to pull things in, right? Without having to open an Explorer window. And I do that with a lot of windows. For this show, for example, I have... we use Notion for the notes. I have that snapped to the right side of the screen so that when it's zoom is just floating in a window, but that thing's snapped. It's nothing is snapped next to it. It's just kind of snapped by itself. I actually just do that a lot. I find it nice to just have something stuck to the side.
I never did this before, but now that you mentioned it, I just snapped the ad copy to the left and
why not?
Notes to
just
the
have
right.
It up there as a,
it's kind of nice. And, because I was on one workspace with several windows, it did show me all the windows on the workspace that I could snap to the left. Yeah, that's right. All I really need. I don't need AI to tell me.
People love their little layouts and things, and you can do that. You can have snap groups and all that, but I don't need help snapping. I don't know what to say. It's not complicated. I can do this on an iPad. Anyway, it's okay. It's not a bad thing. There's really not a lot here. There are a lot of little features. There's no big feature, but it's coming. And that's what a moment is, really, right? It's we get individual features almost every month. And then a moment is several or a dozen new features all coming at the same time. So, and that's what this is. Yeah. It's not dramatic. It's just
nothing special.
Keep usual. Us on our toes. It's cool.
By the way, I just want to thank you for breaking my widgets, because now when I open the widgets, I just get a blank.
Like said, no, it's working exactly as you would expect.
I no longer have the gear that I can fix it. So that's okay. I mean, it's better than having Microsoft News in there. So I still have the weather.
Nothing is better than Microsoft News.
Isn't that weird?
We can agree to that.
I probably just did a restart. It's just a, I know it's just a restart.
One weirdism of the, so I keep the widgets button in the taskbar because I like the weather.
Yeah, me too.
I turn off the ability to mouse over it because I don't want it appearing by mistake. But that said, with rare exception, when a computer reboots or comes up again, that thing is over there with a null icon and I want to see the weather. Right. So I will click on it. It will display widgets very quickly. And it looks exactly like what you just showed with nothing in it. And then I close it and then the weather pops up.
Oh, and interesting.
I've sat here sometimes for 15, 20 minutes waiting for the little picture of the sun to appear and it never does. But if I click it, it always appears.
Well, so. I'm restarting. We'll see. We'll see if it fixes it.
It's a hard computer science problem, I guess.
Turn it off and on. Have you turned it off and on?
Yeah.
It always works.
Just turn it off. I think that's the answer to this one. Oh, couple of other things. So there was there was this big report a couple of weeks ago about how Edge was silently siphoning browser data from other browsers. And I saw that and I thought that's interesting because this is a feature of Edge and I don't understand what anyone's complaining about. And you know what? I should have known better because A, it's Microsoft. B, it's Edge. You know, C, nothing works the way it's supposed to anyway. So there's an inconsistency occurring here where when you run the out-of-box experience, which is that kind of white and blue part of Windows setup that you see when you bring up a new computer or a recently reset computer, it runs through different stages of a wizard, right? And some of them always have to appear, and some of them are optional. Some of them depend on whether you're paying for a Game Pass subscription or a Microsoft 365 subscription. They'll try to upsell you on those things if you're not. But one of the ones that's inconsistent and makes my life miserable because I'm trying to document exactly what happens is it will sometimes pop up this window that says, hey, would you like to bring in your browsing data? And it's the type of thing that sounds kind of innocuous. If you are a Microsoft Edge user and you're using Microsoft Windows with Microsoft Edge on a new computer, and you think what this means is the data that's synced to your Microsoft account, of course the answer is yes. You want that. You know, that's what everyone does with browsers. But they've changed it. You actually have to read it really carefully and maybe even click on the link that goes to the web, because actually what that thing enables is the site, literally every single time you launch the browser, Microsoft Edge will look at all of your browser data in Chrome and import it again, just in case you've made any changes. It's really aggressive. It's totally unnecessary. I don't quite understand what they were even thinking with this, because most people, obviously, a lot of people use multiple browsers. I do, but I don't know that you want them that synced up every single second. And I also feel like the point of this kind of functionality is that it happens once and you're done. You can import it, right? There is an interface buried deep in Microsoft Edge. I've added it to the, no, it's not public yet, but I'm adding it to the book. I'm not going to bother documenting it here as we talk, but you can actually turn this on and off in the browser. And I think that the glitch, such as it was that in cases where people ignored this option or said no to it and then later installed Chrome and or, because it's Microsoft, who knows, you already had both those browsers on your system, it somehow got enabled by default. But this has been a feature of Microsoft Edge for a long time. It's not a new thing. It's it behaving like an errant AI or like Dave or the, sorry, like Hal in 2001 Space Odyssey is new, I guess. But, you know, it's Microsoft Edge. How do you think it's going to behave? It's terrible. Anyway, it's fixed. Okay, I don't know. You get what you deserve, I guess. If you use Edge,
wasn't it Brad that was complaining about all the kept importing his Chrome stuff? I think it was Brad.
No, it was Tom Warren.
Tom Warren. Yeah. Okay.
And then you know, my reaction to that is like, what are you doing using Edge? What do you think was going to happen? Did you think it was going to behave better all of a sudden, or did you think it was just going to always be crappy? Like, what were you thinking? Oh, well. Okay. So speaking of Brad, though, our buddies at Stardock announced something called the Object Desktop Insider Program, right? So they took the worst part of Microsoft and said, look, we should do that. And that's cool. That's fine. So if you're an Object Desktop owner, you can get into they call it a feature. You get into this program and it allows you to get access to pre-release versions of new apps and also features ahead of the public release. This kind of limits the audience a bit, right? But the interesting thing about this is they're going ARM. So If you are in this program, if you own Object Desktop, you and have an ARM-based PC, you can actually download the first pre-release versions of native ARM versions of Start 11, Fences, and Groupy. And we'll see if there are more in the future. We'll see where this goes. But they're actually kind of making a big bet here that ARM is going to become a thing on Windows. So God love them, I guess. We'll see. But there's no way you can do this otherwise. You have to be part of Object Desktop to see this. But
I'll
eventually
try it. You know, because I am using it on my Mac. That's what I use on my Mac. Yes. Yeah. Is ARM version.
Yeah, I don't have an ARM PC here. So I didn't even know.
Right.
I didn't even try. But yeah, I spent half an hour today installing Windows. I have seven computers here and none of them are running Windows 11 Home. I know. And I was like, I'll try it in a VM then, I guess. So I spent half an hour on that. And then the thing I was trying, it was about device encryption, and device encryption doesn't work in a VM because the TPM that Hyper-V supports doesn't work. Anyway, that's my life. And then Google, I don't know what prompted this exactly, but last week, I think, I came up with an announcement. This was aimed at Chrome OS enterprise customers. People might use Chromebooks in the enterprise, but actually it applies to anybody, which is that depending on who you talk to, there could be hundreds of millions of computers that are exiting support with Windows 10 next year. And as we talked about, that kind of
hyperbolic statement that
hundreds of millions of these computers are going to end up in the landfill. And I'm like, well, they're going to end up in the landfill eventually. But
yeah,
if you want to prevent it, Google has a solution. It's kind of interesting. You can use their Chrome OS Flex, right? Which is that open version that works on any computer. And, you know, a bunch of people try it. It's free, by the way. You could evaluate this for free
now. I'm glad that they're continuing to work on this. When it was a company called Neverware that they acquired.
Right.
And it worked kind of on, you know, maybe a third of the PCs I had lying around.
This is so old. It used to be for Intel Macs too. Like it's if you have an Intel Mac, you can work there
but
too.
It sounds like Google's kind of, now they bought it.
Yeah. They made it a formal part of the,
it's good. It's a good use for an old PC. I mean, if you don't going to run Windows 95.
A couple of caveats here. So they do have a hardware compatibility list.
Yes.
If your computer's on that list, you're going to have a good experience. Right. And that's great. If it's not, it's still worth trying. By the way, it's a lot like a Linux distribution where you kind of blow thing onto a...
It actually is.
Well, okay. It's weird how similar it is, Leo. I don't know if you know this.
But oddly similar.
Meaning when you put it onto a USB key, you can boot the computer that way. You don't have to install it. You can just run it right off the USB key to kind of evaluate it. So you can get a good idea of how well it's going to work before you install it. So that's nice.
Yeah.
Compared to Chrome OS, a couple of differences. You don't get Android apps. I think, I'm not sure about this one. I believe you do get the Linux part of it. I hope I'm not wrong about that. And then the support timeline is kind of an open question. And that's kind of the problem. Even if you read that Chrome OS Enterprise blog post, they're really vague about it. They will support it on, well, at least in Chrome OS Enterprise, past the Windows XP timeline. It may vary by PC. It's not clear. I don't know that there's a way you can go into the UI and see, you know, what the date is, you know, how far it's going to go, but it's possible it might, you know, they'll exit support someday, right? We just don't know what that day is. So for individuals, that might be a little more dicey, but, you know, again, if you have an older computer, doesn't matter if Windows whatever is supported or not. It's and you want to try something a little different. I mean, you could think of this thing as a light version of Linux. You know, it's all web apps. You don't get the Android stuff, but I don't know. Honestly, Android apps on Chrome OS are kind of a neat thing in some ways, right? Especially if they've been tailored for big screens and all that. But I don't use too many of them.
It's not a huge loss. Yeah.
I don't think so.
And honestly, if you wanted Linux, just put Linux on there. So even if it doesn't support Steenie, I don't think that's a big deal either.
I mean, Linux has gotten a lot better in recent years, and there are really user-friendly distributions.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Mint and Ubuntu, obviously, but I like Elementary OS a lot. I like Zorin OS a lot. Kind of, if you like something or want something that looks a little bit like Windows or whatever, or even the Mac, you know, that's kind of friendly. It's a bunch of stuff out there.
Yeah, Elementary is kind of like the Mac.
Yeah.
There's a new Pop OS coming. They've rewritten the desktop environment. That's a very compatible and easy.
And that's the one they put on those System
76.
PCs, I think.
System 76, they're a hardware manufacturer, but they are doing a pretty good distro as well.
Yeah, I'll probably look at that one soon, too.
Yeah, I like Pop OS. Yeah.
I've had good success with Linux.
It's gotten more and more compatible.
I don't want to overinflate the stats here, but across a number of PCs,
yeah, I'll say. It's much more compatible than it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
The definitely. Only thing often is you have to turn off secure boot. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but it seems like I always have to do that.
I haven't had a problem with
maybe
that.
Maybe they've gotten around that. Maybe they've gotten around that then. Okay. Yeah. Even better.
Yeah, I have weirder problems like Zorin.
We all know that, Paul.
That's true. Yeah, it's not worth just going into it. It's a graphics thing. It's, if you have an NVIDIA graphics card, there's some.
Oh, yeah. But AMD works best. But I run Linux on an NVIDIA machine, and it works fine.
Yeah.
That's my gaming machine because I can run Steam on it. And thanks to Steam Deck, a lot of those games now work on Linux.
Yeah, and that question came up before the Microsoft event, but. What about Game Pass on Steam Deck, which would mean Game Pass on Linux, which, I mean, that gets really interesting.
I'd be very interested in that. Yeah.
This is years old now, but two-ish years ago, Gabe Newell from Valve said, yeah, we would work with Microsoft on this.
Of course he would.
And,
sure.
And Phil Spencer at the time said, yeah, this is really interesting. And then, you know, nothing ever happened. So I could picture that being part of that Xbox Everywhere kind of deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Or as we say here in Mexico City, pretty bueno.
Pretty, they say that really? Pretty bueno.
I'm trying to make it a thing. That's my thing. All my friends here.
Pretty bueno.
I walked with this a week ago. I walked into our sushi restaurant. I asked the woman there how she was doing. She goes, pretty bueno.
And I'm like, oh, you're spreading it. By the way, okay, two things happening. I got to observe. I'm following your Instagram. That sushi class was wild with the full giant tuna. Holy cow. I bet that was good sushi, too. And the other thing is, obviously, Mexico City's agreeing with you. You've lost weight. You look great.
I always lose weight when I come here. Yeah, I think it's the diarrhea. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's the... No, I'm like... No, I think that there's something about travel when you kind of change your diet.
There's something you're doing. It must be mad dogs or something, but there's something you're doing in Mukunji that you're not doing in Mexico City.
I've told this story before. I'm sure I apologize if I'm repeating, but I always order things without bread or potato or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This causes no end of amusement and confusion. But if you ever want to know that you've said something correctly, for me, it's, hamburguesa con queso, sin papa, sin pan. And they're writing and they go, what?
Really?
Seen pun? And then they laugh. You're like, I said it right.
You crazy.
I am the only person gringo? In this country that orders food without bread.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
That's good for you. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, you look fantastic.
Well,
I noticed at first in your Insta, I thought, whoa, is that an old photo? Because when you did your whole keto phase, your paleo phase, you looked great. You gained a little weight back, I know, but...
Yeah, it was temporary. I mean, it was just...
It's great. You look fantastic. Anyway.
I'm just going to stick with it this time.
Good.
I
need to do that, too. I got to do that, too.
It's hard, but you just got to just work. Just get through
it. But you're still eating... Do you eat beans? You eat beans.
Beans. Digestively, beans are perfect.
So you eat carbs. You just don't eat processed carbs, breads.
Yeah, I have a lot of salad. Potatoes. Eat a lot of salad.
Yeah,
salad. And actually, here... It was a key finding. There are three places in the neighborhood that make fantastic salad. It's like really, really good salad.
Oh, probably you
would. Which, again, you wouldn't think in Mexico.
Oh, you might. Although.
You can buy candy from a child on the street. And I'm talking like a gigantic cart of just multicolored candy.
That's what chunk. I look like for in a city.
It's crazy. I could solve the obesity problem here today. Just stop drinking Coke and get rid of the candy.
I agree.
And when you're done with that, let's start on the bread because it's way too much.
Oh, yeah, the bread. Now, you eat tortillas, corn tortillas?
No.
So none of that stuff?
Nope.
And no potatoes?
That's all I'm saying. And laughs.
How about rice? Do you eat rice?
No.
But beans are okay.
Great.
I want to follow your diet. That's why I'm asking.
The Caldo place, which is like chicken soup. It usually comes with rice. Sin arroz, as we say here. And then it does come with like, is garbanzo beans? Chickpeas.
Chickpeas are garbanzo beans.
And chickpeas probably has, they're the same thing.
Yeah.
It probably has, this probably some carbs to that, but
it's like beans.
It's a whole food.
It's a whole food. It's like beans.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah. That's my theory. Well, and I'm sticking with it.
There's your Paul Theron health tip for the week.
Yeah. When I, careen over from a heart attack tomorrow. You could just go in the other direction.
We're going to take a little break. Richard Campbell is, I hope, going to get here. Is he put a brown liquor?
Yeah, I've not heard a thing from him. So that tells me he might still be.
He's on en route. No brown liquor pick yet. Maybe get Stephanie to give us a nice Mexican cocktail.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
We got build news, Microsoft 365 news. We're going to talk AI. And just in case you didn't get enough Xbox, that's coming up too. As Windows Weekly continues with the solo Paul Thurrott. Build is coming to... Sorry.
It's a quick update, sorry.
Quick update.
Richard did, in fact, text me. I missed it. So it's about half an hour ago. Still in the air.
Oh, he's in the air.
But this is... Yeah.
Well, then.
I don't know where he is in relation to this.
Do you have a flight number? I can track it.
I do. I do not.
Okay. From now on, we got to get Richard's flight number so we could just put it on the screen as he's slowly approaching.
Yes, that would be amazing. Calculate how much time it would take for him. You know, if everything goes right in customs.
He's going to PV. I presume that's vacation for him. He's not doing another conference.
Now, my only question is whether he goes home first and goes from there. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember. I should remember this, but I don't remember.
And then you're going to go home pretty soon or go back to...
No, I'm still here. We're here through the 12th.
Okay.
So we still have almost...
That's
almost
right. We overlap by one day. Yeah. March 11th, we're going to Cabo. So I'll wave fly by.
Okay. Well, you don't fly through Mexico City, though, right?
No, it's a straight flight.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you did go to Mexico City, we'd see your plane. The flight path is right in front of our apartment.
Is it really?
Planes all night. Oh, yeah. All night long. Last night, we saw a plane from Peru that was going up somewhere in North America, not to Mexico. Cool. And planes from the United States coming the other day. Yeah, it was
sometimes amazing. When people get old, they sit on the porch, they look at birds. You're just going to sit on your balcony and look at planes. It's great.
Well, we get to watch the drivers trying to parallel park. That's always hilarious below us. And then, I mean, I don't think they ever taught it in school. It's hilarious. I mean, it's just like they parallel. They do like a 21-point turn. It's like you're still 3 feet away from the street, the curb. What are you doing? Like, I don't know what's happening with those guys. But, yes, we get that below us. We get the planes in front of us.
Very entertaining.
We get stars above us. It's pretty.
Very entertaining.
Yeah.
Let us continue with Build. You're going to have to come up to Seattle in May.
I will see. So, it heard this as a rumor, or from a source that this was happening. So that Microsoft has now confirmed that Build 2024 will be in Seattle on May 21st through the 23rd. The question is whether this is kind of a reduced event like they did with Ignite over the past couple of years and Build over the past couple of years. There's been no word if they're going to invite the press or not. I'll talk to Richard and see if I can sneak in on the podcaster thing again, but I can tell you I made many people very upset by doing that because they felt like if Thurrott was there, why can't we be there kind of thing? Because you're not a podcaster, jerk. No, I don't know. So we'll see. I hope to go. I will go if I can. Absolutely. And that's all we know. That's the whole thing. Well, we know it's going to be a big focus on AI and Copilot, right? It's not going to be
Build is always
a bunch of
fun,
Windows
though, right? Build is one of the
Build
more,
is my I favorite think. Microsoft
yeah,
show
me too.
By far. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because we both like to code and stuff. And I always find that fascinating.
Love it.
Was that the Stevie Batish talk? Was that Build?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And it is amazing how quickly that has risen in the ranks of like greatest Microsoft speeches of all time. It is. And every time there's an AI announcement related to Microsoft, I can point to Stevie Batish and see he said this. This is what he told us was going to happen.
He gave us a great roadmap. I mean, the clearest roadmap.
So well spoken. Yep. And it was funny because it was kind of presented as I'm kind of on the way to the airport and I only have a few minutes. So let me just rattle through this real quick. And then he delivered the most concise, clear-headed, transparent speech about what Microsoft was doing with AI that I've ever seen in my life. Compare and contrast this to such talks in my past as the introduction of Windows Azure, as it was called at the time, or the big Microsoft quantum computing introduction where I walked out in the most confused, befuddled state of my entire life. In both cases, I had no idea what they were talking about. AI should be confusing. It's complicated. And he made it make sense. You know, God bless the guy.
It was very clear. And it was also
a gift.
Really good to hear what Microsoft is planning. You know, what their thinking was.
Yeah, exactly. And my God, you know, again, not to keep, I'm going to try not to keep mentioning this, but one of the things that comes up as a recurring theme in that Sinofsky book is this notion that Microsoft, rather Windows did not have a coherent app strategy since before Longhorn, you know, that made any sense, that they just threw out a bunch of stuff and it never went anywhere. And this is the opposite of that. And again, very high level, it's not like something a developer could say, okay, this tells me the frameworks and languages and things I need to use. It's not that, but just, yeah, exactly. How Microsoft sees, right. And how Microsoft is making their own apps. You know, he cites apps like Designer and Clipchamp, which are in the Microsoft stable.
Right, right.
And then how things like legacy apps, like those apps in Office, like how those things will be Copilot designs, where you work, you know, work side by side. I just thought it was, I can't talk enough about that.
Will he make a repeat of performance, you think, at Build?
I don't know, but given the little, not a shakeup, but given that that org has changed a bit and he is now, you know, remember, he used to be, he was in Surface and was the guy who, you know, like Rolf used to do a lot of the kind of top level designs, but he would work on a lot of the mechanical things like the hinges and so forth. And he's actually now in software. So yeah, I would hope so. And in the sense that everyone at Microsoft is probably now, or hopefully already has, shifted things a little bit career-wise to make sure they're in some sort of AI part of the company. He clearly did that. So yeah, I think he's, I don't know that for a fact. They have not announced speakers or anything, but I bet he's going to be a part of it.
Hmm.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
I want to just congratulate him when I see him next time on his ability to be clear. It's a gift.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice.
Stephen Batiche, he is, what is his job? It says applied sciences here on the.
Yeah. So there you go. That wasn't his title to a year and a half ago. Applied sciences. Yeah. He's working his way, right? If he isn't already, into that Microsoft fellow.
It's like a fellow thing. Yeah.
He skirts into the room like 6 inches above the ground and he speaks and we all just kind of bask in the glory.
Well, just look at his picture on the, on the page. He looks like
a
crazy man. Person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. But he's not.
He leads Microsoft's Applied Sciences Group, an interdisciplinary team of scientists, AI researchers, and product engineers in the Windows and Devices organization.
There you go.
And by the way, they put AI, they put A period I period. Can we dispense
I'm
with
sure
that?
There's a pedantic debate within Microsoft about the correct spelling. Like, this is like,
we got to do it that way. Yeah.
US for the United States is always written as U period S period, and right. UK never is.
Yeah.
And why? I don't know. And by the way, don't tell me. I don't care.
I think we've all agreed AI is just AI, not A.I.
I think so. Yeah. It's become a term. Yeah.
Oh, well, Microsoft. Steve holds more than 120 patents. He's a fellow for the Society for Information Display, SID, and has been honored as an innovator by the IEEE. He's a frequent speaker at international conferences. He's been inventing, shipping new Microsoft devices and experiences since 1999, from conceptualizing the original Surface Table. Oh, that thing was his in 2001. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, remember, you know, there was like this multi-touch effort at Microsoft that kind of predated, literally predated Windows 8, right? So Windows 7 had multi-touch, but they never really did anything with it. They did that D3, D5, whatever year that was, demo. And then, you know, the Microsoft Surface Table was part of that era of whatever. And then with Windows 8, they brought the Surface brand into, you know, essentially the Windows group to become Surface, right? The PC line, right? And those table, big screen, blah, 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 that became like Perceptive Pixel or something, or they kind of swapped brands basically. But yeah, I guess there wasn't a big market for Pac-Man games in casinos. Who knew? You know, tabletop games.
I saw one in a casino hotel once, and I saw one on a cruise ship once.
Yeah, those are the types of places where you would see such a thing, right?
Yeah. Resorts.
It was a neat demo. I mean, we'd interact with physical objects, you know, in unique ways, which I thought was kind of cool, but it was just hard. You know, it was just like HoloLens. Like, okay, this is really cool. What do we do with it? You know, and I don't think they ever landed on anything.
I also think there was a reason it came out right after the iPad, which was Apple saying, well, I mean, Microsoft saying, yeah, we got multi-touch. We've been doing, we've had this forever, except it wasn't an iPad. It was a little larger.
There was a lot of backpedaling. You said, it's like, did you say tablet or table? You said table. I thought you said table. That's weird. So it's not the something I could carry around. It's something I would sit at. You know, slightly different product.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. All right. What else? Let's see. Microsoft 365.
Yeah, a couple of things. It is uniquely weird to me that Microsoft developed Microsoft Teams, sought to integrate it into Windows 11, but used a separate Teams app that was only for consumers, never made the flagship Teams app capable of just being one app that worked with everything, released a major new version last year, right? Which everyone loves, basically, because it fixes all the problems, except for this one. It's, you still need a different app on the client for consumers. Windows 11 23H2 includes the second major version of that. They got rid of that, I don't even remember what it was called. That's crazy. That whatever that purple icon thing was on the desktop, or the taskbar, rather, that was in the first couple of versions. Major rev of that product. Nobody uses it, right? Why would they? And meanwhile, over on mobile, Microsoft Teams always has had one app that works with both types of accounts. So without any ado, there's never been an announcement, but Microsoft quietly about a week ago added to the Microsoft 365 roadmap that they're going to unify the clients. It's going to be one on both Windows and Mac. It's going to happen pretty quick too. It's supposed to start rolling out in stable in April. So this is something I guess they've been working on. I don't know what took so long or whatever, but they're doing it. So that's good. The normal reaction to the sentence Microsoft is killing Microsoft Publisher is they still make Publisher.
And not only they're not killing it now.
I know, in 2 years.
They're killing it in 2 years. Like,
I got to tell you, I've said this, I've said some version of this a bunch of times, especially recently, probably. I'm getting a little tired of what I think of as faux outrage. And you know, when Sonos started obsoleting older speakers, everyone who was freaking out was not a Sonos fan, like a user. They were just other people, right? Or when, you know, Apple and the DMA, or you pick your little tech controversy, it's always like people, they don't even have any stake in it, right? We'll talk a little bit about Firefox later. You know, the people who think that they should be able to, you know, it's important that they have their own rendering engine, don't even use Firefox. Like, what's your angle here? You know, now I'm not saying there aren't people that use Publisher, but I had to look this up. Now, I knew Publisher was still in Microsoft 365 because I see it, right? I install it or it's on PCs. Like, I know it's there. I couldn't tell you the last time they updated this app. I was surprised to discover that this thing has been around since 1991. It's actually one of the oldest apps what's now Microsoft 365. It's one of the oldest Microsoft Office apps, right? When this thing came out, the competition was Aldus PageMaker and Quark Express, right? It was InDesign didn't even exist. And back then, of course, a lot of the things we were using computers for would output on paper, right? Whether it was a document or even like a slide deck, you would print the thing out. Like, printing that thing out was like a big part of the experience. Like, paper really mattered. And I'm not a user, but the things I remember about this product is that when Microsoft had their internet explosion thing in the 90s, when they did, you know, turned on a dime and everything was going to be internet, they went through a couple of different phases where maybe this app would be the thing that consumers will use to create web pages, right? Microsoft Word was one of those. And so too was Microsoft Publisher. I mean, think about it. You're publishing this thing that has kind of layouts and everything. Maybe this could be published into a web page. And I'm sure they, for some years, they probably had that in there. Obviously, Front Page kind of became that thing. And they did online versions of it, like Microsoft Spaces, or I guess it was Windows Live Spaces, probably, whatever that was called, MSN Spaces back in the day. Yada, yada, yada. It doesn't matter. The last major update to this product is, I think, 15-ish years ago. They haven't, you know, people who do use it will tell you that. They haven't done a lot with it. And of course, the people who do use it are upset that this thing is going away. But it is going to be in 2 years, and you have a chance to kind of figure out, you know, what you might want to move to. I will just say that from a publishing perspective, this kind of publishing, you know, the world has changed, right? I'm sure some people are still making pamphlets and brochures and things like that, but I'm sure they are. I'm not trying
PageMaker. Is that going to go away?
I'm using a product made by Koala
Broder Bund Print Shop Pro. Yeah.
On the dot matrix printer, you can make like a Broder banner Bund. That said
happy birthday.
I'm sure there's still a need for that. I'm not downplaying it. I will say I did walk through an Office Max the other day here in Mexico City, and they have giant large format printers for people who want to print things. So you don't have to own these things. But anyway. I think these days, a lot of this stuff is happening online, and there are solutions like Canva would be the big one that people think of. I think where the thing you're targeting is probably social media, right? You might want something that is formatted for a phone or whatever. Publishers, obviously not the right thing. And by the way, Microsoft has their own thing called Designer that targets that stuff too. If you want to stick in the Microsoft sphere, there you go. But you have 2 years to figure it out. It's not like it's an emergency. Although if you're using Publisher, you're probably not moving very quick, I guess. I don't know. It's weird to me how upset people were about this. We'll see how it looks as we get a little closer. I don't know. Publisher.
I would like to have 2 years notice before everything. Before I kick the bucket.
Yeah.
Leo's going away in two years. You might as well.
You got a pancreatic thing happening, Leo, but you got a good 2 years to go. You'll be fine.
Oh, God. Don't know. Actually, I take it back. I don't want to know that. I don't want to know.
What's happening?
Oh, you're right. God,
why did
awful.
You tell me that? What do you.
Why did you tell me that?
There's nothing I can do, right? Okay, great. Can I move to Canva? I mean, nothing.
I don't know about you, but I'm going to have some of this peaty and salty single malt whiskey.
Peaty and salty? That is the wrong combination.
It doesn't seem. Well, they're both savory.
Peaty and salty?
It's Japanese.
Okay. Is it like a barbecue in a bottle? What are we talking about here? You know what I mean? Like, what is that? Like peaty and salty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, delicious. Mm.
All right. There's your exciting, thrilling, gripping Microsoft 365 issue. I think we should talk about AI. We haven't talked about AI in a few minutes.
Okay. Yes. We'll start with the Microsoft leaning.
I got to tell you, I am all in on AI. I love AI. I was completely a skeptic. And now
I was too.
I'm a fan only because of how I use it.
I know. I can't believe how fast it's happening. I'm paying for two AI things now, like a jerk.
We'll
get to that.
No, I'm paying for it. I'm paying for OpenAI, $20.
I think it's going to settle in, but maybe it isn't because I pay for like eight different online video services.
Yep. Me too.
Difference.
Perplexity.
Maybe this
AI.
Is just the new subscription. I love that there are still skeptics out there. I had a guy in the past week tell me in comments that this was just a scam perpetrated by Microsoft.
That's what I thought.
I think you might want to look at it again. I don't think that's the takeaway.
Kind of what I thought initially, but then
a
I
scam.
Started, what it is general AI, like where you just kind of say, hey, you know, tell me a story. That's dopey. But if you give it a corpus of information, if you make it it's a really good expert system.
This is my end game. This might result in me finally writing a book, which is just taking all the stuff from the past and giving me a way to actually make sense of it. Because right now I have to dive into all these old folders and try to figure stuff out. And it's a nightmare.
If you could dump all your notes from whatever Notion will do it actually now. Notion has it.
Yeah.
I think that's a really useful tool. Now the new thing is they're training AI, multiple AIs. Google's thing is, if we thought, AlphaGo played chess well, but what we're doing is we're taking Deep Blue and AlphaGo and all of these, and we're going to have them teach each other.
There's probably a better way to say this, but it is these, specialized use cases, for lack of a better term, where they make this giant thing that's the internet, and it's amazing, but inaccurate, you know, hallucinations, whatever. And then you kind of bring it down. And you work with a finite set of data that's very specific to some topic, you know, maybe. And I think this is where, I think all of it's amazing, but there are going to be some, like, for example, they have already, since the dawn of the AI age 17 seconds ago, translated these scrolls from languages.
Oh, wasn't that amazing?
I mean, it's,
they have the scrolls from Pompeii that were ash, basically. You couldn't unscroll them because they would fall apart, but they're using x-rays and AI, and they're able to able to read them.
This is, oh God, this stuff is amazing. This
really interesting
world. Stuff. I love this.
Yeah.
So, and we'll get into this a little bit because, you know, Google, as Google brings their AI down from massive cloud ultra, whatever, to Gemma, to now you have it in Workspace and as an individual in Google One, you know, they're starting to talk and they're starting to go the enthusiast route. Like, here's some offline, they don't call it nano, but some offline whatevers that LLMs that you can use against NVIDIA chipsets on your own laptop.
And NVIDIA's released one. I've tried Ollama.
Honey.
Is one, and what, your wife, is she bringing you a drink?
She's talking on the phone, like 2 feet away from me.
Hey, and then I said to him, I says, pretty, pretty bueno,
Pretty bueno. That's pretty no bueno over there.
I've tried Ollama, and there's one called GPT for All, and download them to my Mac. And then you download a model. It has to be, you know, it doesn't have to be, it should be an open source model like Llama 2. And then you can try stuff, but I still haven't figured out, and I think there's a Python script to do this, how to get my PDFs into it. Because if I could just do that, then I won't have to, you know, and I think they would want that because it saves them money too, right? It's using my electricity, not theirs.
That's right, of course. The more this stuff works locally, right? I mean, this is
private.
It's genius. And it kind of hits on all those levels.
But it needs an NPU. You need an NPU, I think.
GPU, frankly, right?
I mean, that's what NVIDIA's saying, but they're...
The thing, all of the offline local run solutions have been optimized against NVIDIA for years now. I mean, that may change over time, but for now,
right?
I mean, this is kind of it's kind of a good way to do it. So Microsoft will commercialize this or whatever, is something called OneDrive, a Copilot for OneDrive. There's no way that Gemini for Google Workspace won't do the same thing, right? It may not today, and I don't think it does, but this is coming. And so people who are on Workspace, you know, for business or have a Google One subscription where they pay another $20 a month will be able to do this against their Google Drive, right? I mean, it's coming. So, I mean, based on how fast it's coming, it's probably going to be here before next week's show. So, you know, hold on to your seats. No, it really, it's astonishing how... We keep saying we can't get used to how fast this is happening.
Yeah.
And then a week goes by and it's like, it's happening. It's still going. Well, I don't understand how this is possible.
That's the thing that scares people is that that it's going to somehow reach some sort of hockey stick growth thing. And then.
Yeah.
Stephanie, can she make us a drink?
We have people here, who I'll ask her that. Yes. Rich's not going to be here. So we're probably going to need a cocktail if it's okay.
This I like.
No, right now. No. It's
right now we need a cocktail. This I like.
No, we've had ongoing issues with our water heater.
Oh, okay.
Unexpectedly, they have arrived to fix it 10 feet away from my head. All right. So anyway.
Don't worry about it. Just keep on going. Keep on going.
That's right. So, there was an Intel event today and Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella showed up to say, and very vaguely, just like the Xbox thing, we are going to use the Intel Foundry. They have that 18A process they've been talking about that will start shipping in the second half of this year they said a chip, right? So Microsoft, remember back in November, announced two custom AI chipsets. One was a CPU and one was a GPU, Azure Maia and Azure Cobalt. Almost certainly going to be one of those chipsets. By the way, these were ARM designs, if I'm not mistaken. I think both of them were. But they're going to use the Intel 18A manufacturing process, which will be their most advanced ever when it ever launches. And they say they're still on track. And Intel had a bunch of other announcements around this. I mean, they have a bunch of other CPU architectures and things happening. But, you know, they're trying to drum up what they say so far has been $15 billion in manufacturing commitments for the foundry business. They're looking at getting another $10 billion from the United States in subsidies, right, for that Chips and Science Act. And Intel's uniquely positioned to take advantage of that. They're the only ones who are like, we're building stuff here. Let's do it, you know. So a little vague. We don't know exactly what form that's going to take, but they did announce it. This has not been formally announced, and they refused to acknowledge it. But OpenAI went through another round of this is a specific kind of funding. It is a, what's it called? When you're a private company, you get tender offers, right? So this is a way for investors to invest in your company when you're not public, right? So based on this, the value of those shares, this company is now worth $86 billion, right?
Wow.
Which is almost triple the number it was less than a year ago. And that's how fast AI is doing things, right? This is the incredible nature of this thing. Couple of other things related to money in OpenAI. They're looking at other funding. They should be worth over $100 billion within a month or two. And Sam Altman, the CEO who was deposed and came back, has been talking about this a lot publicly, right? He's trying to raise billions of dollars to help fund the manufacturing of OpenAI specific AI chipsets, right? They're trying to do their own chipsets.
$7 trillion.
You're going to need AI just to express these numbers.
$7 trillion. I don't know what he's going to do with $7 trillion.
He's going to build a lot of chips, and then he's going to dominate the world, I think, is his idea. And
that's evil villain money. I mean, that's...
I know. It's James Bond. It's James Bond villain.
$7 trillion. Yeah. That's like a... That's like the
defense. You twirl your mustache,
budget.
You stroke your Cheshire cat, you get your eye patch going.
This guy, nobody can accuse this guy of lack of ambition. That's all I can say.
I know.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Holy moly.
And if you thought this was a scam, I would say if you haven't looked at this, they announced something called Sora. This is their generative AI video tool. Holy God. You see this
Holy
thing?
Cow. Yeah.
I brought my wife. I said, you have to look at this. I showed it to my wife. I was like, this is, oh my God. So, you know, right now it's limited to a minute, requires a lot of horsepower. They're working with content creators, but also with people on the ethical side of, you know, you want to make sure this stuff doesn't, you know, just duplicate Star Wars, you know, and then you got Lucasfilm, you know, suing you like you've got the New York Times. But some of the, obviously it's AI, so there are things, but I mean, it's also video, so you can edit it. And some of this looks amazing.
It's incredible.
All of it looks amazing.
Yeah.
So do look at that if you haven't. It is incredible.
I'm trying to pull it up here, but
some of the there's like, you know, the woman walking on the streets of Tokyo at night is one of the really good ones. The two little pirate ships floating in coffee, which is pretty classic.
And these are all from text prompts. That's what's amazing.
Text prompts. Yeah.
Yep. This is not. They're not giving them film or something. It's text prompts.
That's right.
Incredible. I have it, but I'm in trouble getting my computer to show it to people. I want to show you this. It's so cool. All right. Well, you can go to, you know what? Go to therat.com and read the article. He's got a link to it, and you can, we'll probably be talking about this on, Twig.
No, it's impressive. I mean, the DALL-E improvements where they kind of went from Pixar to photographic quality were, you know, impressive. But this is video.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what makes this so incredible.
So this is the prompt. A stylish woman walks down a Tokyo street filled with warm glowing neon and animated city signage. She wears a black leather jacket and a long red dress and black boots. And that's it. I mean, AI artifacts in it. It's not perfect.
Yeah, people have pointed out little things, you know, of course, right? But this is early days. And by the way, I'm sure this is very calculated, right? This isn't quite ready, perhaps, but they're also trying to raise a bunch of money.
I don't think you can use it yet, right?
No individual can go use this, but they're, you know, they're working with filmmakers. They're working with
scientists. That always makes me a little suspicious when they say that. There was one I saw that was a guy walking on a treadmill, running on a treadmill, where it got the prompt wrong because they wanted a guy running. And then he's also running the wrong way on the treadmill, unless there are reversible treadmills. I don't think.
I've seen those guys at the gym, though. You know, they're not very smart.
Running backwards.
Yeah.
This is a wild one. It's a tour of an art gallery with beautiful artworks.
Yeah. Every one of them copyrighted.
Yeah, probably. Right?
Yeah.
A gray-haired man with a beard in his 60s in deep thought, pondering the history of a universe as he sits in a cafe in Paris.
Someone just told him he had 2 years, you know? You and publisher are going out at the same time, so figure it out.
Three Wolf Moon. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Three Wolf Moon. It's really cool stuff.
Yeah.
I look forward to it. Yeah, the problem is because they didn't, you can't do it yourself. We don't know how good these are. Maybe this took 100 different images and tuning and tweaking, and they finally got the one they wanted. Still, wow.
I know.
Wow. Yeah.
What is that URL that's next to my name? I'm sorry. AndroidIntel.net. What is that?
Did I put something there by accident? Or is that?
I don't know what that is.
Just ignore
it. Windows. That's the window. Oh, those are my partners, but that's not my website. It's
okay.
That's okay.
Gemini.
Yes. So Google has Gemini, right? They announced that in December with three different levels, different sizes. They also announced the Gemini Pro last week, 1.5 version, which is better than their Ultimate or Ultra, whatever it was called from the 1.0 era, which is, you know, we're quickly leaving behind us because it's been 2 months after all. But these are their proprietary kind of commercial products, right? They charge a bunch of money for people to use these things. And what they've done is they've kind of used that as the basis for smaller LLMs or SLMs, I guess, that can run locally. Just like we see around different things, you know, you run them in Hugging Face and so forth. And it's called Gemma, right? So there are two sizes or two versions of that. And this was similar to what you were talking about earlier, where they haven't said what they're going to be, but they're going to make versions of this for very specific use cases, right? In the future. So if you're an enthusiast or a developer or someone wants to get in, this is free. It's open source, I believe. There'll be more. And they're kind of, this is their entry. You know, Microsoft has some stuff like this. Everyone does, right? So interesting. I thought, you know, they're kind of bringing it down to size here. And again, a further indication of the quick maturation of this stuff. It's kind of crazy.
Here is the guy running backwards on the
That's beautiful. Treadmill.
See, treadmills
now,
don't
see,
they don't go that way.
Well, they might. I have seen people on a treadmill backward at the gym.
Yeah, but they face the other way. They're running backwards.
The treadmill's going the normal direction.
Yeah.
And you have to hold on to the sides because you kill yourself.
Right. This guy
doesn't look like an athlete.
What's really interesting to me is it's the prompt is step printing scene of a person running. Cinematic film shot in 35 millimeters. So the AI added the treadmill. There was no need for that. No call for that. But then look how the camera movement is.
It moves as if to make it like a handheld.
Yeah. That's amazing.
This is like the horse video where they proved that all four of its feet actually did leave the ground at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. It's really, really fascinating to me. I'm so excited by the world. Finally.
I know.
Because technology was getting a little boring.
People say things and they sound like exaggerations, you know. People will talk, this is as big as the GUI. It's as big as the internet. I think this is bigger
this one
than
is.
All of that
this
stuff.
One is. It's biggest. It's the biggest yet.
It really is. I if you're not getting that yet, I don't know how closed your eyes are, but it's all around you. It's just happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, look, this is going to be stupid examples. I mean, obviously, AI is going to be... Microsoft is so abusing the Copilot term that they're going to destroy their best brand in 50 years.
Well, and that's just like the internet, there's good and there's bad. I mean, there's also a flood. Yeah. I think going to be a flood. There already is of crap. You know, CNET and others are using this stuff to create junk articles, link bait. The amount of link bait and spam is going to skyrocket.
I've never used it for writing, I will say. I'm not saying I won't. I mean, I am, though, really. I except that it's moving so fast, I wonder sometimes. Maybe there's some use for it I haven't figured out. But obviously, I use it for images.
Right.
It's that.
Great for that.
Fun. Yeah.
That's fun. So what if a bunch of artists get thrown out of work?
Listen, it's a victimless crime. That's the way I describe it. And... I don't know.
You know what? Be a better artist than the AI. That's the trick. Make better movies than the AI can make. Write better text than the AI.
It's not even that. Here's the problem. Imagine, so I go to copilot.microsoft.com and I write in my stupid little prompt, right? It's always something ridiculous. I want something that looks like the gates to the Garden of Eden as if painted by a Renaissance master.
Perfect.
Except that I want there to be a Google logo on the gate.
Perfect.
Because this is an article about Google, right?
Perfect.
So that thing, it does a little thing. It burp, 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 and I don't know, 30 seconds less, 20 seconds.
It's amazing.
I have four images.
Yeah.
Now imagine I went to a human being and I'm like, I'm really concerned ethically about getting rid of jobs and yada, yada, yada. And I say to them, I would like the thing I just described. How long would it take that person to create that image? You know, this isn't for a book. It's for a news article that I'm going to forget. Well, or an editorial that's not going to matter in about 2 seconds. You know, like what do we call that? It's like there's no value in engaging with a human being for something that is ephemeral. But once it becomes so easy to do it this other way, then I can use it for that kind of thing, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that's fundamentally, it's like someone could carry me to the restaurant, but we have a bicycle. You know, like it's, I would get there either way, but because the other one is so slow, I'm not going to
take the bicycle. I agree.
Take the bicycle. You know, this does not absolve me ethically.
We have to resolve these problems. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Listen, we all use iPhones from China. I think we've given our ethics a long time ago, but
yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Okay. I'm not sure if this is a good example of AI or not. I got to be honest. So Adobe, because of what they do and the products they sell, is going to have a massive imprint on AI. And that stuff's amazing. And there's all, I feel like every couple of months we see new Adobe innovations. And they're doing it ethically, maybe not be the right word, but in a way that will protect businesses from abusing copyrighted works. You know, they can assure that the content they're training off of is owned by them, and there's something good about that, right? So I like that. But they're adding an AI assistant to Adobe Acrobat. Now, the correct response to that sentence is they still make Adobe Acrobat, because seriously, if you use that thing without having an Adobe like subscription, it's a giant set of 225 ads. That's all it is. I don't actually think the app does anything unless you pay them. Also, I'll just point out that every browser on Earth reads PDFs.
You don't need it anymore. So you don't.
You don't need it. Now, granted, I'm not talking about editing PDFs. That gets into some complexities, but I don't know. So I would say in the Adobe empire that exists today, Acrobat is their least interesting.
The ultimate crapware. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad.
Oh, you just pasted something new in.
That might be Richard.
Richard has arrived, dun, perhaps. Dun, dun. I see breaking LlamaSoft, the Jeff Minter story.
Yeah, so that came right before. Well, we'll get to that.
That's in the Xbox segment. All right. Okay.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. Continue on.
We're done with AI.
We're done with AI.
That does bring us. All right. That does bring us
all
to.
Right, let's get to Xbox. It's Xbox time.
Yeah. So we actually talked about this earlier. So I'll just briefly mention again that Microsoft has been talking about this notion of game preservation and how this might look in the future. Obviously, the goal on Xbox as a console is to try to have that backward compatibility play. They've done a great job on Xbox One and now Series X and S in giving customers the ability to access these games across generations. The problem with older games, of course, is that you might run into technical issues. Publishers were not interested in doing the work, that they don't see the value of it. And so for the older games, 360 OG especially, we hit the wall on that. Like we're pretty much done with those. I'm not saying there won't be any further on maybe 360, but OG definitely is over. But what does this look like in the future, right? Because as Xbox expands to include subscriptions and cloud streaming or cloud gaming, I guess, what about game preservation there? And he's talked about it, you know, a little bit vaguely, but later this year, there should be some form of your game library being played in the cloud, which will make it, you know, truly universal, or as universal as it can be. And then, you know, it's the second half of the month. This is a short month. We have more Game Pass games that are arriving in the next 2 weeks. You know, Madden NFL 24, big one everyone's heard of. Warhammer, right? That's another big one. And then a bunch of crap I've never heard of, and what's happening, I don't know anymore. So I'm really hoping that, well, Activision Blizzard's going to change this. I keep saying it, but now we know that won't happen until the very end of March at the earliest. So there's going to be a beautiful day in March where we say you could play Diablo 4.
I'm excited about that, although I did pay for Diablo 4. So I really
like the, I can't wait to see what this looks like. I hope it doesn't come with a resulting price increase because
we'll see. Madden 24, that's good.
Madden 24 is a good one, yeah. Or at least a big, famous, well-known one. You know, when we get into things like virtual fishing, it's like,
Tales of Arse. Yeah, I don't think I want to
play Tales of Arse. I think that's Arise, by the way.
Oh,
different kind of game.
Yeah, different. I don't want to play that. Bolt gun.
Mm. I know. Is that where you take out the cow at the end? Is that you're like the last guy in the...
Oh, yeah.
Is that what that is?
That's it. Cattle stunner.
Hopefully
that's
not.
My next game.
Cattle stunner.
Cattle stunner.
How many cattle could you stun in an hour?
Jeez. All right. I'm sorry. Continue.
Microsoft has been kind of vocal here, and they admitted that they're actually working with regulators in the EU to kind of to explain why what Apple's doing is not okay. Crap, Sullivan. But although I will say, he made a really good point. You know, he said, you know, Apple has the best user interface designers in the world. So when they release software has a really bad user interface, you have to know it's premeditated, right? That they kind of dictated it had to be like this. You know, Apple, their thing is like we've hundreds of Apple team members who spent tens of thousands of hours working on this thing. Yeah, it's hard to circumvent the law. You know, like, you know, I'm sure it took a lot of time. But anyway, we'll see how that one comes out. I just find it interesting that Microsoft has overtly decided to you know, kind of take a stand.
And Meta.
Meta doesn't surprise me. There's no love lost. You know, you got to remember, like, when was it iOS 16 or 17, whatever version, where they put in that don't track me across app thing? You know, Meta, like, their revenue on the iPhone, like, plummeted.
That's a good point. And that was kind of a shot across the bow, wasn't it?
that was directed at Meta specifically, right? And because that's their business model, you know? And we don't cover this part of the industry per se, but I only half read the story because I don't really care that much. But I think it was, I don't remember if it was Mark Zuckerberg. Somebody said that maybe it's just a source was saying, like, they're actually alerting advertisers, like, look, we're not going to make any money on the iPhone. So let's do it in different ways.
Wow.
You know, like it's almost like they're actively trying to undermine the iPhone now, which, so, I mean, that makes sense in some ways. But yeah, those two companies hate each other.
As you know, I guess in a way, it's a good point that you're not operating in a vacuum. Apple or Meta or Microsoft or anybody, we're all in this together. And so if a company really starts to act poorly,
right,
you're going to get some resistance. Okay.
This is an interesting ethical question, right? I think objectively, most people would agree that silently or non-silently, whatever, tracking people in the background, watching their activities, storing their information, binning it together, selling it to advertisers so that they can target you with personalized recommendations, right? Take advantage of you in that way is, it's a little shady, right? It's not great.
Easy.
But is it on Apple to make the decision that that business model of one of their biggest partners is unacceptable and they're just not going to allow it anymore, even though they do exactly the same thing, by the way?
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of a, it's an interesting gray area where the, this gatekeeper in this case, we'll call him, has become like the policeman and the judge and the jury and the executioner. They've just unilaterally decided we're doing, you know, your business model stinks and we're not going to allow it. It's not illegal. By the way, maybe it should be. And I guess
in the data brokers, maybe it's becoming. Put the data brokers out of business. Then we can talk, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not coming out on any side here. I'm just, as we say, I'm just asking questions, which
just want
is
to know.
One way that's to all. Identify yourself as a jerk up. But
I hear people saying that Paul wants to know.
Yep. I'm just saying there's violence on both sides. I don't know. I'm asking questions. Anywho, after saying they wouldn't do it, Epic came out last week and said, yeah, we're going to build a game store on iOS in Europe. There's no way they can make any money on it. I feel like they're just doing it out of spite. And you know what? God bless them. I don't care. That's fine. The more realistic outcome here, or maybe the more realistic excuse for what they're doing, is that they feel like what Apple have done so far to appease the DMA is not going to fly with regulators, and that those rules will change and they'll be in place to have their store, which in fact will make sense when the fee structure is different. So,
that's an interesting gamble. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It really is. But it's a big market. See, this, remember, we talked up front about the relative size of the console market and the mobile market, you know, the PC market is roughly the same size as the console market. That's where Epic Games plays today with their own store. But of course, their most popular games are on mobile, right? So things like Fortnite. And they can see the horizon of, you know, if we do this thing, I mean, this is going to be exponentially bigger for us.
Fortnite's where the money is. They made billions and billions in one year.
So that's it. That's why. I mean, honestly, you could almost call it, we're just going to make the Fortnite store. I mean, might as well just call it what it is. But obviously, they hope to have other games that will, you know, have a similar level of success. But very interesting. And, you know, I've said this a bunch of times in the past 10 seconds. We'll see.
The problem is that just Apple takes 27 cents. It's not like
they're assuming that's going to stop, right? That is violating the spirit of this thing. The point of it wasn't that you keep collecting all the money. You actually open up the platform.
Right.
We'll see.
A
lot of debates these days around spirit versus the letter of the law. We've all become EU legal scholars, apparently. We all know a lot of that stuff. You know, when Microsoft was in antitrust court in the late 1990s here in the United States, I had to learn about antitrust laws and how those things actually work, right? And you still get into debates with people about what constitutes a monopoly, you know, at what point is it acceptable or not acceptable for a company to behave in a certain way. These are still, because it's very vague. It's very hard to, you know, say, look, it's very explicit. It's this thing, you know, it's hard. Yeah. So right as we were starting the show, like 5 minutes before, I got an email about this and, the game documentary, you know, that interactive documentary series, Llamasoft, the Jeff Mintner story, is coming out on PC, Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo on March 13th. And this is that second game/documentary series, whatever, from the company that brought us the carrot.
Who is Jeff Mintner?
Yeah. He is the guy that made 42 games across the 80s and 90s on classic platforms. You know, typically back in the day, Apple, Commodore, et cetera. The company that's doing this is Digital Eclipse. They were bought recently by Atari because Atari has now, the thing that is Atari today, has kind of dedicated itself to retro gaming. Before that purchase, they had made that Making of Karateka, which was unbelievable, right? So he made such games as Sheep in Space, Attack of the Mutant Camels, Hellgate, Laser Zone. He wrote games that ran on the Sinclair CX81, what we saw here in the U.S.
Oh my God, Sinclair. They must have been
the Spectrum.
They must have been text games almost, right?
No, they were like high-resolution games.
Yeah.
But no, VIC-20 and 64, Atari 8-bits, ST, Jaguar, right? A lot of stuff. So this thing is going to have a remastered version of his Commodore 64 game Grid Runner, which I actually owned back in the day. Modern graphics and sounds. So it's going to be a virtual museum of design documents. You know, the documentary we expect now, the bunch of other video features, etc. So they had announced that this was going to be the second game. I think it was late last year, right? Early December last year. It will be available on those platforms, like I said, but also through Good Old Games or whatever that's called now, GOG.com for PC users. So these things always have awesome.
I love this so much.
Special features. And, yeah.
Love this idea.
So good.
An interactive documentary. It's just perfect for the medium. I really think this is great.
It's the right, look, the people who were around at the beginning of this industry, like I was, were kids then and are, you know, advanced adults now. We have money and we have nostalgia and we're very interested in this stuff. I think this is smart. So plus it will introduce these games, which to us are classics, to an older generation, right, of gamers who don't have access to play them on those original platforms.
And these people, these guys like Jeff Mintner deserve the attention because, I mean, they were,
they were pioneers.
They're pioneers. And it's like cinema. I mean, this was the early days of cinema. This was the early days of it. And great stuff. Really cool. I don't think they
when I said I was an advanced adult, I meant like an age, not in sophistication.
You're very good at being an adult now. You're in the advanced.
I hope that was clear. I careen in and out of adult behavior.
I'm an advanced adult.
In a very mental way.
Minter and Llamasoft really were mostly English, right? So
these work. I mean, look, when I was 12, 14 years old, these games were quirky and weird, right?
Right.
No,
which made it fun.
Well, Grid Runner wasn't, but I mean, a lot of the Llamasoft stuff was very strange. And, but that was, you know, it was a great era of really advancing or quickly advancing technology, experimentation. And, you know, just like we see today, there's a lot of Me Too type games from that era, like a bunch of stuff that looked just like Space Invaders, a bunch of stuff that looked just like whatever. And then there were these kind of like a little more, you know, quirky and unique games and pushing the boundaries. It was good.
He's still around, which is kind of, I'm on his website.
Yeah. This is why it's also a good time to do this stuff, right? Because these guys who are making these games, there are other efforts sort of related to this. You know, the guy who did the Prince of Persia games and, I'm forgetting the other big game he had. He's written lengthy books about his two biggest. Two biggest titles. Like there's a lot of content all of a sudden, and it's really neat. They're the guy who wrote the Atari ET game and was part of that documentary that Xbox put out has a book out that's fantastic. And this is a great time for this kind of stuff. It's really neat. No one who's ever met a llama would ever name anything
after a llama. Well, this guy actually raises llamas.
They're horrible animals. That's just so.
In his bio, he says he's living. Where is it?
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I live in beautiful surroundings in rural West Wales with my partner, Giles, 4 sheep, 2 goats, 2 llamas, and a small mad border collie named after a curry.
There's no yak in this equation.
His name is Yak. He's Yak. He's Yak. He's Yak. That's the funny thing. It's funny you should say that. That's his pseudonym. Jeff Minter is Yak.
Really? Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. If I was going to create a software company in the early 90s, I was going to call it Yakware. And I have a fun little cartoon logo of a yak.
There you go.
And that's why I made that joke, not because of
himself a yak. So he's with you. He's right there with you. Hmm. And he even has virtual reality games, The New Frontier. Wow. They're working on it.
Anything for HoloLens? No, probably
not. No, not even HoloLens. Not even. Polybius is going to be a. This is even this game, which is for a PS5, looks old, right?
Yeah, right. It does. Yeah.
That's cool. I like the good old days.
I do too. That's why I want VR to take off so I could just kind of succumb to it.
Yeah. I'll just bathe in it. Yeah.
Yep. I'll just group into the couch.
Well, speaking of good old days, it's just Paul today, which means the back of the book will feature just his tip of the week and app pick of the week. And if Stephanie comes through, we might have a drink, a cocktail of the week. But before we get to that, I want to take a little time out and mention our club. We have such a great group of people in our club Twit. 11,306 now. Not all of them are in the Discord, but a lot of them are. That's a great place to hang. The Discord is kind of the clubhouse of Club Twit. And it's not just talking about shows that are currently on. It's talking about anything that geeks would be interested in. Everything. I spend a lot of time in the Advent of Code section where we talk about coding and things. But there's so much there. That's not all, though. If you're a member of Club Twit, you also get ad-free versions of all of our shows. For a long time I said you get shows we don't put out anywhere else. Well, we've changed that a little bit. We now put out audio versions of everything we do, including your show, Paul, Hands on Mac, Hands on Windows. But just video is just available in the club. So if you want to watch Paul on the Hands on Windows show, you got to be in the club. But you can listen to it. And we think that's good because that way people can kind of hear iOS Today, Hands on Macintosh, Hands on Windows, the Untitled Linux show, which has never been in public, Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson. you can hear those shows. And if you decide you want to, we want to give you a little incentive to join the club. If you decide you want to support TWiT with your $7 a month contribution, you can get the video versions as well. Discord, ad-free versions of all the shows, video of all the shows, stuff that happens before and after shows, additional content like that. All of that for $7 a month. But the real thing you're doing here is the thing I really think I always wanted to do, which is have a podcast network supported by its listeners. We started that way. Maybe I don't know if people remember that, but we started that way. But the infrastructure wasn't there. There was no Patreon. We used Memberful and Patreon Company. There was no Memberful. We had a PayPal tip jar, you know. And it wasn't enough money to grow like I wanted to grow the network. I could do maybe one show and that's it, and no studio or anything. So we did start doing advertising, and that's been very good to us over the last 19 years. Advertising has helped us build studios, expand our offerings, pay great hosts like Paul. But advertising starting to dwindle for podcasting for a variety of reasons, most of which I don't really understand. So we really are kind of moving back to that old model of, you know what? We would like to really be supported by our audience. And here's our, we've been doing this for a couple of years. It's growing great. We'd like to grow more. Right now, 11,000 members is, well, we have about 750,000 uniques a month. So what is that? That's 2%. It's a small percentage. If we get that to 5%, if we get that to 10%, we would not need advertising, and we could expand. We could add shows. We could pay our hosts more. And I would like to do that. So with your help, if only 2 out of 100 of you are paying, that leaves 98 people who are not members of the club. That maybe is you. TWiT.tv/clubTWiT. Be one of the few, the proud, the smart who support this network. And I do thank you very much in advance for that support. We will come back with the back of the book and Paul Thurrott in just a moment. Back of the book time. It's all you, Paul. Tip of the week.
Yeah. So in the Microsoft space here, we're all very well aware of the book Showstopper by G. Pascal Zachary.
Great book. Sorry, by the way. Wonderful.
Try here.
But that was about NT. Yes.
It's about the creation of Windows NT. Yeah. So as it turns out, there's a book about this, a book like this about Android called Androids.
Oh.
Excuse me again. The author of that book is now leaving. Actually, I think it's 14 years, not 18. But the author of that book, Chet Haas, was not there at the beginning of the creation of Android, but he was there at the beginning of the Androids bit when they were in Google. And he's been there ever since. And he interviewed all of the primary players in Android to write this book. So it's kind of, you know, the definitive history of that time period. I mention it now because he's leaving the company. Interestingly, he's leaving it to go into comedy, like TV writing.
Okay.
I guess he's a comedian. I know.
Okay. Well, good luck. But you know.
Yeah, I guess
you got that good Google money. You don't really need to make a living. So. Wow.
Yeah. So I bought this book when it first came out many years ago, and I just went and looked at it again, and it's available in an Audible version. So I just purchased that. I'm going to listen to it on the way home from Mexico and as I walk around here. But yeah, it's a great book, and it's also available in Audible if you have a credit to spare, like I do.
Nice.
So, cool.
Is it funny?
It's not a laugh out riot. If that's, it's not the Martian.
I'm just wondering why Chet thinks that maybe his next big thing would be writing comedy.
He's been doing this on the side for a long time, actually.
Oh, okay.
Right. So he's and he's been going back to school for this. He's taking classes in the past.
Yeah. Good for him.
We all have different little life skills. He was actually, you know, when you see something like this, you think what you're going to see is something, any indication like, oh, Google's changed and blah, blah, blah. I can't, you know, nothing. You know, he loves Google. He loves everything great. Although he's always thought of himself more as a someone on the Android team. And actually, if you follow his career arc, it's kind of interesting because he shot up the ranks. And he's like, I don't want to program more. And he went back down the ranks specifically on, you know, to write more code, you know. he wanted, he's honestly, I don't know the person. I mean, but based on what he's written about himself, I mean, it's very clear he had things he wanted out of life and didn't care if he took a pay cut or a job title cut or whatever. And now he's leaving Google because this is what he wants. So I respect that.
Nice. Good for you.
Quitter.
I shouldn't knock it. That's great. And I would like to announce that I am going to be quitting my job here at the Twit Network to become a house painter. It's something I've always dreamt of. I've always wanted to do. I'm taking
a
class.
If you could learn how to fix water heaters, I actually have a need for that right
now. Good money.
I could be your first client.
Good money in that. Good money. Yep. App pick of the week.
Yeah. So about a year ago, I picked a password manager. I went to Bitwarden, and I didn't really regret it. It's worked out pretty well. So it's kind of technical, but I like the whole open source. It was actually, it's free.
Should mention they're a sponsor, just, you know, for the disclaimer.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Okay. That wasn't why, but I, you know, they worked out well. But toward the end of the year, I started getting to the security stuff. I went down that rabbit hole where Microsoft had added support for passkey management to Windows 11, which triggered this and that, and I just went down this path. And as it turns out, all major password managers are talking about passwordless. And in this case, I mean accessing the password manager itself in a passwordless fashion. All of them support it to some degree. Some of them require you to start a new account and it's in beta, whatever it was. I had bad experiences with both Bitwarden and 1Password, which are generally considered to be some of the best ones. And I talked to a couple of security experts, and eventually I tried Dashlane, which offers a passwordless account. You have to sign in for the first time on mobile, and it works like Brave Sync works. You once you have one device, you use that to okay you on the next device. You kind of create this chain, and of course, because I review so many laptops, and I think I probably set this thing up on 117 different computers and devices, so it's worked out great. The passwordless stuff is real. It's fantastic. It's not passkey based, which I think is a plus, frankly, but the point is it's passwordless and it supports passkeys. Actually, one of the things they do, this is not a standard yet, but when you save a passkey to your computer, because this thing is the password manager, it offers to save it to itself rather than to the computer.
Bitwarden does that too, which I really like.
That's a neat feature because it makes it portable.
Right. So now my Bitwarden, I log into GitHub with Bitwarden. It's really a great way to,
nice. Yeah. And you only have to do it the one time. And now it's all you have to do is install the thing elsewhere. And then it's.
I wish more websites supported that. So
here's what I wish for passkeys, that more websites supported it, consistently. I've gotten into it. Like, for example, I bet 2 months ago, I would have said something like, I really like the way Google does it. They put it in front of you. They kind of force you to deal with it. If you're on Windows, there's this thing in Chrome where it will, you can protect their password manager with Windows Hello, which I think is a neat thing to do, a smart thing to do. But I get into the situation. Well, there's problems, right? So I'm testing a Samsung Galaxy phone that I'm going to review, right? It can't, for its camera, when I pointed at a QR code for Google.
Yeah.
All it does is make a URL. It doesn't do a passkey.
Mm.
And if you have set up a Google passkey, the number of steps you have to take to do 2FA without using that passkey is like 17. And you can't, unless it's buried somewhere in your account settings up in the cloud. I haven't looked at it yet, but on that PC device, whatever it is, you can't say the simplest thing to me is send a code to my phone, right? Because I've got the Google Authenticator app on all my devices. That thing syncs those things. It works great. No, I have to, every time I get prompted with the QR code, I can't use this camera for it. I say, no, goes it try another way. Can I do it? It's like this crazy, it's like you're digging yourself out of a hole, and it's, God, it happens again because of all the devices and everything. And think about I review laptops. I'll install 4 or 5 browsers on a laptop. So that's 4 or 5 times as many times. Is every time I sign into Google, it goes to the whole, it's awful. Anyway, Dashlane solves that problem too. So that's kind of neat. So it's not passkeys, but it is passwordless. And I think that's job one for security that is both actually secure and convenient.
Nice. Yeah, I look forward to a day. Well, I don't have to enter another password.
We all do.
Someday.
I have a couple of extra app picks because Rich is not here. Firefox 123 came out, version 123 came out this week. Two features. One of these I find vaguely amusing. One is they've added search to Firefox View. If you don't use Firefox View, that's that extra mini tab in the left corner there where it shows you your kind of history. You can go through all your stuff across devices, right? So if you use your Firefox account or Mozilla account now across devices, it will, you know, it's a way to get to content that you were looking at other computers. Now you can use search with that. So not a big deal there, but obviously necessary. And then they have, because they don't use Chromium and the whole web is kind of, you know, oriented itself around Chromium, they added a web compatibility reporting tool. So when you, if you run into an issue with a website, you can report it to Mozilla and they'll work on their rendering engine to make sure that gets fixed. So there you go.
Nice.
I recommended this first back in probably December at the end of the year. I used to use something called, actually I forgot the name of it. It doesn't matter. So who cares? But I use it as a homepage.
Screw it. I don't
Momentum,
like it anymore.
Sorry, Momentum.
Momentum.
I paid for it. Is a kind of a homepage thing on all my browsers. I use this new thing called Bonjour. So it's Bonjour, the French word with two R's at the end because I guess they stutter or something. And it's free, open source, privacy focused, minimalist, a beautiful photo, switches throughout the day. It does everything I want, and now it does more. And I've actually, since I wrote this article, actually implemented a bunch of this new stuff. So they have those links at the bottom, like quick links, like we see in other browsers, right? And there's a bunch of new features related to those. You can have folders. You can have pages of those things. We have buttons on the bottom, so you switch between them. So that's one of the ones I did. You can do bookmark sync. So if you had a bookmark to your browser, it goes into your homepage thing here now as well. I love this. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I gave them, it's free. I donated some money today because I love them so much. And it works everywhere. It. So there's versions for Chrome and Chromium. There's versions for Firefox. There's versions for Safari if you're a Mac user. So it's pretty much everywhere you want it to be. And this is the kind of thing I use. I like I said, I used Momentum before. I like this one better. Beautiful. It's really nice.
Nice.
Yep.
There we go.
And it's super configurable. Like you're looking at it now. If you can see it on the screen, it's kind of the base, you know, config. But there's all kinds of stuff you can do. They customize this however you want it. It's really, really nice.
Really
and the
cool.
imagery is really nice too.
Yeah. Changes. It comes. You can get it from Unsplash or local mm-hmm. files. Actually, yep. I'm going to do my local desktop files because I have quite a few. That's cool. I like this.
Yeah, it's a really nice homepage.
Bonjour.
And I don't, you know, everyone browses differently or whatever, but I stopped using bookmarks a long time ago, but I do have these links I use every day, you know, just as a matter of course for work, et cetera. I have certain tabs that I pin to all my browsers, you know, so I created a page of just those. So I don't have to type, you know, so for me, it's, you know, Gmail, Google Calendar, Twitter, Mastodon, which is twit.social. And then recently I've added Blue Sky and LinkedIn just to kind of, you know, keep track of that kind of stuff because I stupidly own a company like an idiot and, you know, trying to figure that out. So, but now, you know, it's much easier to set that stuff up again, right? So it's nice.
Yeah, I just added some of my bookmarks that I go to a lot. That's nice. Sync new ones, link pages. That's nice. Open a tab.
Right.
Wow, very impressive. And it's free. Reminds me of the good old days of, what were some of those home pages that we used to do, like My
GeoCities.
Yahoo? And
it was a my.google.com,
Maybe. There was My Yahoo. Yep. There's still Start Page, I think. Some people use that.
Sure.
Custom page.
And if you hate yourself, just use Microsoft Edge and keep it on its default homepage.
It's beautiful.
A bouillabaisse of crap.
It's a work of art.
It's the online service equivalent of the browser you're using.
Stephanie has come through.
Yeah. So to be clear, she did not invent this cocktail, but you can Google this. There's one of the unexpected benefits of Mexico City is that some of the top bars in the world are here. And the one we like the most, then we go to the most, is called Baltra. It's about the size of our bathroom. It's really small. But they have incredibly inventive cocktails. And that we both get quite a bit, actually, is called Sumi. And you can see the picture of it there. But it's, you know, gin and violet liqueur, jasmine syrup, yuzu, which is a kind of a Asian citrus fruit, I guess. an egg white, which you can tell from the foam at the top there. And then they always garnish it with dried flowers.
Lovely.
It's beautiful.
Lovely.
And that drink you can sort of see in the back that's green is
straight tequila
based tequila.
Oh, okay.
No, it's tequila in this case, but there's a mezcal version as well. And that's amazing too. Their cocktails are amazing. And it's one of the few places, this is a weird one. So a place as cosmopolitan and as just as humongous as Mexico City, if I walked into a bar, 20 different bars, and said I'd like a Manhattan, I can tell you that I get more confused looks to that question than I get to the no bread question I was joking about earlier. It's hard to find a place that even understands what this is. You know, it's one of the most common cocktails in the world.
That's so weird.
But when I walk into Balter and say, well, when they say, do you want it straight up or do you want it on the rocks? I'm like, I love you people. Exactly.
Balter is one of the world's best 50 best bars.
Yes. It's always in the top.
Unbelievable.
List, always. Yep.
What the? And you get somewhere. This is your neighborhood bar.
You could walk there in 15 minutes. It's unbelievable.
Oh, you are living a life.
They don't even ask me anymore. When I go in there, they're literally like, all right, you want a Manhattan? What would you like? You know?
Pretty,
they're fantastic.
Pretty bueno.
Pretty bueno.
Are they going along with the new language, the pretty bueno language?
So I've not tried that there, actually. But, I bet
very
they would.
Nice.
They're very nice people.
Pretty bueno.
This kind of reminds me. I think it was like an Arrested Development joke, right? The guy. Was like,
No. It's Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, no. The guy who did Seinfeld.
Yeah. Larry David. It's Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Right. That's kind of how I say it. So that's what. Yeah. It's from Larry David. Yeah.
Yep. Mr. Paul Theriot. Look at that. All by himself. He lifted this show on his own broad shoulders.
Another Richard failure. I don't know what we're going to do with that guy.
Richard is still in transit, I'm sure.
He wanted so badly to be here.
I know. He hates missing the show, but he'll be here next week. You will also be here next week. Mm-hmm. I will be here next week.
I'll try to have the guys come in and do the refrigerator next time.
That'd be good. That'd be good.
You know.
Yeah.
We weren't expecting them today. That came out of nowhere.
That's fine. You know what? When they arrive, you welcome them with open arms and you bring them in because who knows when they'll come back.
I know.
We do Windows Weekly. You know when we do it, you know we're going to be here 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC of a Wednesday. That way you can watch, you can enjoy at youtube.com/twit. Of course, if you're in the club, you can watch on the club stage. There's a stage there for the show. After the fact, on-demand versions of this show are at twit.tv/ww. There's also a YouTube channel dedicated to the videos of this show, youtube.com/, I think it's Windows Weekly Show, but I can't remember. You know, if you go to twit.youtube.com/twit.
It's just Windows Weekly.
Just Windows Weekly. We own it.
Yep.
We're awesome.
It's also at Windows Weekly. We'll do it like YouTube
at Windows ring the bell, hit the button, do the thing.
Yeah, all the cool kids are doing it.
I can never get that.
Thank you so much.
You can also subscribe in your favorite podcast client. You will find Mr. Theriot at theriot.com, theriot.com. Now, become a premium member. It is worth it. Trust me. Great stuff. Lots of free stuff, but there's great stuff behind the paywall. It keeps Paul gainfully employed. You can also buy his books, Windows Everywhere, the history of Windows through its programming languages, and the Field Guide to Windows 11, including Windows 10. Both of those are at leanpub.com. Pay as you will.
Probably going to just go into TV comedy writing, I guess.
Let's do it. We'll do a little...
Yeah.
We could do, you know.
I did have an idea for a show. It was just going to be me and my friends from high school. It was going to be called Townies. And we're just sitting there at a bar making fun of
Townies.
People. And then people would just sit next to us. So it could be someone different every week, you know?
You know, if it's got a Boston accent, it's a guaranteed hit. And it'll be easy to cast because everybody in Hollywood wants to do a movie with a Boston accent. So you're set.
Wow. And
you're
I can set. Tell you that none of them can do it accurately.
Oh, I'm
so
sure.
Please stop.
I'm sure.
Just stop.
Yeah. Paul, thank you so much. We will see you next week. Thanks to all our winners and our dozers. We will see you next week right here on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.